Hot Again from Stained. It's been our number one for 5 weeks.
That wraps it up for us. Learn more about our guest Dead Sarah at DeadSarah.com.
Get caught up on the Sideshow chart at TheSideshowCountdown.com. I'm Nikki Sixx.
I'm Carrie Kasem.
And we'll see you freaks next weekend.
The Sideshow is now over. Go ahead. Stick a golden fork in it. We're done.
Now.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. Welcome to WRIF's award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan. Peter and Julene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter and Julene.
Hey, thank you very much. Welcome. Hi, Julene.
Hi, Peter.
Can you imagine? I think I even said this last week. About 2 months ago, I was saying maybe we ought to dump that intro.
I know, because you
power to the people.
Yeah,
and the revolution
starts
now.
And now.
Sounds more real, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does.
Hey, this is the Riff's phone-in talk show. Didn't I just hear that? Yeah, I think Mr. Announcer said. Yeah, we've been, collectively, this has been going on for almost 40 years here.
I know.
Making the longest running talk
Amazing.
Show in American history, radio history. Our number is 313-298-WRIF and 313-298. Oh, I'm sorry. That's your
313-298-9743.
My apologies. I stepped on your line.
How dare you?
We want to welcome back Athena, who our world traveler, who's
yes.
back taking the calls at 313-298-WRIF. And so
Sarah's here as well.
Sarah's here as well. So Team Night Call is...
We're in place.
We're in place. I got to do one thing, though, that I haven't done yet, and that is bring up our little screen so I can tell when we have calls. But I'll do
You'll
that.
You'll get to that?
I'll
okay,
that.
Good, because that's what this show's all about.
Yeah.
You.
Taking your calls, and I know.
Well,
I know. You all know. It's really about us blabbing. But we got to take a drink of water or something. We'll get some of you callers.
We'll let you get a word in edgewise.
Hey, everything seems to be popping. All these occupations all around the world. There's Occupy Detroit. There's Occupy Windsor.
Lansing.
Going. Oh, Lansing's happening?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I think we could begin to. There's supposed to be Occupy Waterford.
Oh, cool.
Really? Yeah. So maybe we could name those cities that don't have occupies.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Right, exactly.
You know, I was reading a post about someone who said something somewhat positive about the occupiers down in Detroit at Grand Circus Park, but as well, at the same time, they said, too bad it doesn't make it mean anything. Too bad none of this will make a difference. And I just thought, really, I think you need to see a bigger picture here, because look how it has taken off. And look at the attention it's getting, even
yeah.
from the bigwigs of the world, you know? Except for Wall Street.
Yes. Well, you don't know where it's going. It might just kind of fizzle out. It might be because, as we said, the teabaggers, the Tea Party, was bankrolled by the billionaires, by like the Koch brothers. That, so it really was this top-down manipulation of people's dissatisfaction with things on the right. And so they just easily rolled this all into the Republican Party platforms and legislation in an attempt to dislodge the Obama presidency. And I don't know where this can actually wind up.
Yeah.
Because they always say, what do these protesters want? You know?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you go to a protest, you can see the signs. They make it real clear what they want.
Yeah, well, the baggers have, I forget, limited government, less taxation, and more freedom. And that's what they're really good about.
You know, sounds good on paper.
Simplistic talking points.
Right, exactly.
And probably some big PR firm hired by the Koch brothers. Those are the billionaire brothers that put together essentially the Tea Party. And so they may even work those out. But if you start trying to really analyze what that means, what does it mean? Less taxes. I certainly think
for
there ought
whom?
To be. Yeah, for whom? I think that we ought to have less taxes for the middle class, less taxes for, say, the bottom 90%, and more taxes for the upper 10%, for the upper 5%, the 1%, and particularly that one, I never can say the word, one thousandth.
One thousandth
of the population, extraordinarily higher raised taxes. But in the end, it would mean that the vast majority, 90% of the American people, would have much less taxes. So we agree with that. Limited government. I guess I don't think that's a good idea at all, because one of the reasons that we're in the pickle. I had a lot of other words I could have used. One of the reasons we're in the jam or the pickle or whatever we're in now is because of the lack of regulations. This is the whole Reaganomics, and Reaganomics has destroyed the economy, almost destroyed the world economy, because it was this huge gamble to make even more money for the already wealthy. Well, and now the ultra-wealthy are just making more and more money, the middle class, and people blow it, beginning to go down. Can I, what do they call that? Can we have a little time out here?
What for?
Let's, you know, we just, usually we have a little chit-chat.
We
usually
do?
Talk about the fun things.
Yeah.
Now, you went to an incredible thing last night. There were how many people? Thousands of people.
Thousands of people at Theater Bazaar.
Theater Bazaar.
At the grassroots, you know, the people put this thing together. Halloween party. It was outrageous.
If you're not from the Detroit area, it's at the Masonic Temple.
That's the largest Masonic temple.
And there's supposed to be all sorts of secret rooms there and everything. Yeah. Jimi Hendrix played there.
I know.
All this stuff. And I saw
the White Stripes there.
They have music there. But what's strange about this, then, it's so enormous. I don't know what the Masons ever could have done with that.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place.
So everyone's in costume.
Everyone's in costume, and there's all kinds of little individual freak shows.
Yeah.
And as they, you know.
Bands, a lot of bands.
There was music, and there were burlesque shows. And, I haven't really seen a burlesque show. I don't think I've ever seen one before, except maybe on TV.
You mean take it off, kind of thing?
Well,
did they take it all off?
They took a lot off, you know, but, you know, you got to stay within the legal bounds. But these women were on it. I mean, they were outrageous.
Now,
quite the show.
From the conversation of me and Jalene, you would think I was there also. I mean, given the context of, the audience and, Riff being a rock show.
Yeah.
A rock station. I was at the opera.
Yeah, but it was a...
This was an incredible...
Opera with Cirque du Soleil type of...
Yeah. This is Carmina Burana, which is usually performed simply as an orchestral piece. I'm willing to bet 75-80% of you have heard parts of this in soundtracks and all this, except as Jalene just said, it had acrobats and dancers,
and
this enormous
singers.
Chorus, the incredible costumes, a light show.
See, well, it's almost as exciting as Theater Bazaar.
but when I go there, it's one of the few times you'll ever see me in a sport jacket and slacks.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know what? It used to be everybody was in suits at the opera.
Yeah.
And then, began, there'd be a few people without ties. And then every once in a while, I'd see people in Levi's.
Really?
That's so good. I mean, it's always been kind of stuffy.
Well, good. We both had a good time.
Yeah. And
in the midst of it all, what?
Well, in the midst of it all.
We had things to celebrate, even though it's about Iraq. But it's not the whole picture.
Hey, the war is, what's in there, John Lennon, Yoko
Merry
Ono?
Christmas.
Yeah,
the
war is over.
Yes. See, now that's really going to get some airplay this year, I think.
Really?
Because they are coming home
the
holidays.
Yeah. Do you folks know that? President Obama's announced a total 100% Iraq troop withdrawal. That is, the U.S. troops are going to be coming home. Here's the way the report is written. President Barack Obama on Friday declared an end to the Iraq war. This is the war. You got to remember, folks, I mean, if you say some of you are listening, are 17, 18, 19 years old, this is like a war in 1984, in George Orwell's 1984. It's always been going on through your lifetime, right? It started when you were 10 or something like that, and it's... what is it, 8 years, or, you're 18 years old now, or, like that. So this is a war that's always been there, and Barack Obama has finally ended it. And I don't know if I need to give people a refresher. This was based on a total pack of lies that an invention of the Bush administration and people that, when we talk about people being war criminals, like Donald Rumsfeld and Bush and all these people that sanctioned torture, that committed a crime against peace because they remember the ostensible reason that they went in there? They were supposed to, Saddam Hussein, this is like saying Saddam Hussein, it's like saying, what's her name, Monica Lewinsky or something like that. It seems like such ancient history now.
I know.
But he was supposed to have been building weapons of mass destruction and was a threat not only to his, quote, neighbors, but even to the United States. So the United States had to launch a preemptive war. Yeah. In other words, hit them before they could hit us.
With what, you know?
Yeah, well, so it turns out, there weren't any. Right? Well, they knew that. So it was a purposeful lie. Thousands of American troops have died, up towards 5,000, up towards 40,000 casualties. We've spent anywhere, when this is all the bills come due, somewhere, if you will, between $2 and $3 trillion.
Yeah.
If you think about that,
based on one person's
life.
Desire to go back in there and lie his way into it.
Mostly,
disgusting.
Mostly Dick Cheney, who was the vice president.
Yeah.
Mostly him.
Right.
I mean, they all came along. They were all along for the
Darth
ride.
Darth had a lot to do with it.
Who did?
Darth Vader.
Darth Vader.
Yeah. And now the old Republicans, I know what they're going to start saying is, especially on, you know, the one channel, that now they're going to hit us at home because we're not going to be safe over here because we're not over there, right?
Right.
You know they're going to say it.
Well, if this war had not occurred, people, and we would not be spending $2 to $3 trillion. Already $800 billion have been spent, and the $2 to $3 trillion has to do with all the costs that are going to be run up, including medical stuff for the next, they think in some cases, 30, 40 years.
Yeah.
That people
Which
are going
we
to
predicted.
Need care. Yeah. The kind of damage that was done to our soldiers, the immense damage that was done to the nation of Iraq with, somewhere again, between 150,000 and a million Iraqis were killed. Now, that great disparity probably isn't even worth arguing about. Once you start getting into six figures of people dead,
mm-hmm.
it's hardly worth the effort. And when you, the kind of corruption, what is there? Something like $60 billion unaccounted for from that we were giving to the, we. And I use that advice. I'm not talking about
taxpayers,
we, the United States.
Money.
I mean, like you and me. And if you're not paying taxes, you know, your parents or somebody like that. So Obama has announced the withdrawal of troops from the country by the year's end, before Christmas. But get the wording in this from Yahoo News. Obama's statement put an end to months of wrangling over whether the U.S. would maintain a force in Iraq beyond 2011. The president never mentioned this tense and ultimately fruitless negotiation with Iraq over whether to keep several thousand U.S. forces there as a training force and a hedge against meddling from Iran or other outside forces.
Mm.
Now, can we go back over that?
Yes.
As a hedge against meddling from Iran. Now, let's do a little geography. Where is the United States? I don't know the exact figure. It's somewhere like 4,000 to 6,000 miles away from Iraq, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Iran is directly next to it.
That's right.
So who's the meddler here?
Right, exactly. We went there.
Who's the meddlers here? That whack job, what's his name? Abedina. Why can't I say that sometimes?
Oh, yeah.
We were gone.
Why'd you just do that to me?
Abedina job. I practice these things. This is that's why I've never become an announcer on a classical music station.
Oh, that's funny.
The president of Iran. Who any more of a whack job than Dick Cheney or Donald Rumsfeld or George W. Bush? So anyway, they don't want the Iran meddling or other outside forces. Well, I would say we are. But we're actually still going to be paying some bills there, in fact, big ones, because ABC News reports that the State Department is expected to have about 5,000 security contractors in Iraq as of January next year. And also, I don't know what this even means, 4,500 general life support contractors to provide food and medical services. This is incredible.
I know.
Right now, there's almost 10,000 security contractors in Iraq.
So we're getting out, but we're not.
Exactly.
But all these people are continuing to make loads of money, these contractors.
Loads of money. Where did I see? Oh, yeah. This all comes on the heels of a report by the Commission on Wartime Contracting in Iraq and Afghanistan, which found that federal contractors working in the two countries lost $60 billion. Oh, sorry about that. Yeah. Where? I don't know. It was in my jeans pocket. Maybe, it got kind of got messed in the wash or something like that. Let's see. Here was part of what. It's the U.S. scales back diplomacy in Iraq amid fiscal, which means financial, and security concerns. So they're talking about cutting back on a lot of these diplomatic, economic, and cultural programs once seemed vital to steadying Iraq. So this is where our money's going. We're not way over here. I don't even know if I can even find it. The Detroit Teachers Union, Detroit Federation of Teachers, is, do you have that handy? Is just angry because some of these, well, that kid is going to school in Detroit. He's got 54 students in his class. This is a violation of the contract that the Detroit teachers signed. And here it is. Detroit Public Schools grapple with crowded classes. This four-year-old is in a class with 54 classmates. So 55 people in there. And here are the contractual limits. 25 students for K through third grade, 30 for grades 4 and 5, 35 for grades 6 to 12. Any of you ever teach or teachers now?
I have. I substitute time.
With 35?
With about 30, and I about lost my mind.
Yeah, this is insane. This is absolutely insane. Keith Johnson, DFT president, said at Carson's Elementary, four classrooms have 47 to 56 students each. These classes have up to 38 to 42 students at Gomper's Learning Academy, a K through 8 building. Now, in the meantime, though, we're spending billions for contractors to provide meals and medicine in Iraq, right? Okay, so here's what was going on. As recently as this summer, the State Department had planned to establish a 700-person consulate in the northern city of Mosul. Are you ready for this? 700 people? Do you know how big how many people are here? This is like three radio stations right in our radio group. Mm-hmm. And I think we have 60 employees or something like that?
Well, there's got to be more than that.
Well.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe.
Right around there.
Yeah, right around there. And they're talking about 700 in the city of Mosul, Iraq. This is all coming out of the budget. And as recently as the spring, the United States was moving ahead with plans for a consulate in the ethnically divided and potentially explosive city of Kirkuk. Kirkuk.
Kirkuk.
Kirkuk.
Yes.
You know who's got their eyes on that? Abedina's got it.
Or however you say it.
Yeah. The State Department plans still need approval from the Iraqi government and financing from Congress. The department has requested $6.2 billion to finance its operations for next year. Wow.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. 700-person staff would have to be, the vast majority of the 700-person staff, would have to be contract security guards. I got a better idea. Why don't we get the hell out of there and use this money for our cities?
Yes.
Anybody think it's a good idea to keep spending money in Iraq? 313-298-WRIF is our phone number. Other programs are also affected. State Department plans in Iraq had called for nearly 350 contract workers for an ambitious police training effort. There will now be 10 Office of Security Cooperation locations which manage the sale of weapons and training when the previous plans called for 15.
My gosh.
This is insane, people.
Yeah, it really is.
This is where our money is going. And also, so we're fighting another war in Afghanistan that looks like Obama is going to disengage us from another war that shouldn't have been fought, another war that never would have had to necessitate what went on. Because because you remember, this again, ancient history, in 2001 after 9/11, the location of Osama bin Laden was pretty well known.
Yeah.
And
Bora Bora,
the Bora Bora region, and that's where Bush could have sent troops quickly, legitimately, to arrest this criminal that committed this dastardly deed. Instead, they said, "I got an idea. Let's overthrow the entire government of Afghanistan and put in somebody who will be our little puppet."
Yes, but what has he said recently?
He said recently. Days after he stood with Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and accused Pakistan of harboring his country's enemies, President Hamid Karzai of Afghanistan said this weekend that his country would support Pakistan if it ever went to war with the United States. all these lives, all these billions and billions of dollars, this lack of success. The United States is never going to win in Afghanistan,
right,
just like the Soviets didn't.
Like no one does.
Just like the Brits didn't in the 19th century. The comments were broadcast Saturday on Pakistani television, again displayed Mr. Karzai's ability to mystify his Western backers who have shored up his administration with billions of dollars in aid. That should be our tax dollars. And in military support during his nearly 10 years as Afghanistan's leader. He said in an interview with Geo Television, God forbid if there's ever a war between Pakistan and America, then we will side with Pakistan.
Yeah.
For some reason or other, the interview was conducted partly in Urdu, the language, and partly in English.
Oh.
So, there you go.
So, yeah. There's a good stuff. And bad stuff.
Yeah. So it's good that finally we're out of there. The damage that was done. In fact, you go to my website, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com. There's a statement by Cindy Sheehan, who lost her son in the Iraq War. And
Casey.
Yeah. And she says, justice for Casey Sheehan and hundreds of thousands of others. Oh, yeah, right. I forgot about that, too. Singer-songwriter David Rovix is going to be in town. You can go to David Rovix, which is RovixIcs.com, DavidRovix.com, and get the details. Or you can go to my website and click on his the photograph of him.
Yes, he's wonderful.
And he will be at the Unitarian Universalist
yes.
Church at the corner of Cass Avenue and West Forest. That's just south of Wayne State University. And it's $10 to get in, and plus you get a meal.
There's food. I know. I'm excited.
That's amazing. It's amazing.
Probably some good hippie veggie food, I imagine.
Probably.
Good.
Yeah. It's put on by this union, the Industrial Workers of the World. They call the Wobblies. And the Wobbly Kitchen.
That's great.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, you go to IWW.org.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And they've celebrated way over their 100th birthday, the union.
My gosh.
Yeah. All right. They've been around, I think, 1905.
Seems to give some hope.
Yeah,
right.
Also, all this information, although it's not the best place to get all the information about Occupy Detroit, the best place is the Occupy Detroit website. You get an idea of the breadth of what these people are putting together, with the base being this encampment at Grand Circus Park in downtown Detroit.
And they made it through all that rain.
Well, what's happening? I thought, man, they're going to get blown out because they're tenting out, right? And it's in the shadow of Comerica Park and Ford Field and all that. So it's right down there, right near the Opera House.
Yeah.
Yeah, and all that. And today I was down there with some friends, and they had a man whose name was Eddie Daniels. And they said that he had he'd been a prisoner on that prison island with Nelson Mandela.
Oh, that's right. How was that?
That was absolutely incredible. So he was born in 1920. So he was an 83-year-old man.
Wow.
He was he actually was involved in armed action against the apartheid government. People weren't hurt, but they were
protecting themselves.
They were blowing up stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Like that. Well, this was this absolutely repressive regime that allowed no democratic process whatsoever, is that Africans were, not allowed even the barest of human rights. They would have, they had better rights in the segregationist South than they had in South Africa. So
he wanted to be a part of Occupy Detroit.
Well, he came down for it, yeah. And because he was on this island prison, what was the name of the prison that Mandela, Robben Island, was that it?
I can't remember.
Something close to that. In any event, I thought he'd be an African, and it turned out he was, a white South African.
Oh.
And for some reason or other, they put him as the sole white prisoner with Nelson Mandela. And they had all these, so he gave this talk right at Grand Circus Park today at about 1 o'clock. And what an incredible man.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. And he was he's friends with Mandela, and he lives still in Cape Town, South Africa.
Really?
He's written a book. If I had a memory, I could remember.
So is he out touring with the book?
He's touring with the book. He was in prison from 1964 to 1979.
Wow. So you'll be interviewing him, right?
Well, I got to catch up with him. He's on this book tour. I mean, he's like 83, credibly vibrant and
wonderful.
And he was just so impressed with Occupy Detroit.
Good.
Hey, any occupiers listening that give us a little scoop on what's going on? One of the things that happened on Friday at noon, there was this big march on the Guardian Building, which is the headquarters in Detroit at the Bank of America.
Yep.
And that went really well. One of the reasons that they wanted to do that, you know, Bank of America, that guy bailed out. What did they receive? $45 billion in federal TARP funds. And now they've made like a 2011 profit of $6.2 billion. This is profit. On the other hand, there are almost 136,000 foreclosure filings in Michigan. And no city, you know, been really hit harder than Detroit. Maybe a few, but we're right up there. And they were demanding that an immediate moratorium to stop foreclosures and foreclosure-related evictions in Detroit. There's actually a state statute that allows that.
Is it really?
Yeah, which people have been trying. They tried to get the Democratic governor. How soon we forget?
Granholm.
Granholm, yeah, to invoke it and. She wouldn't do it, and certainly Snyder's not going to do it.
Oh, hell no.
Yeah.
He doesn't care at all.
The Citigroup, another one of these banks that got its enormous bailouts, as the housing market began its collapse, Wall Street firms and sophisticated investors, this is interesting because some of the banksters have been calling the Wall Street protesters unsophisticated.
Oh, no, they've gone even further than that. You know, the druggies and the hippies and... dirty and
grimy,
smelly.
They do say unsophisticated as well. And sophisticated investors. What is sophisticated investors
mean? What does that mean?
To you?
Does that mean you wear a suit and tie? Does that mean you?
It
you
means
know,
that
have
you
a manicure?
Know. It means you know how to take advantage of people.
Right.
He knows how to manipulate cash and investments. But here, some of them found an easy method. Stuff a portfolio with risky mortgage-related investments, sell it to unsuspecting customers, and bet against it. Because they bet it was going to go, the stocks were going to go down.
Yeah.
So here, I mean, isn't this criminal activity? Isn't this what the teabaggers and people like Ron Paul and all that want? Unregulated. In fact, all the, I don't know, I got some on Ron Paul, but all these guys, they want to deregulate things even more. They want to deregulate the polluters. They want to deregulate the banksters. Are they really crazy? I mean, are craven or what?
Yeah.
I don't get it.
I don't either.
But Citigroup on Wednesday agreed to pay $285 million. All right, we really got them by the cojones, right? Well,
no.
Turns out that even part of this is a $95 million fine. But even in the Times, it says a relative pittance for a giant like Citigroup. On Monday, they reported third quarter earnings alone with a profit of $3.8 billion on revenue of over $20 billion. So, let's see. But I don't get this. Citigroup settled a civil complaint by the Securities and Exchange Commission that it had defrauded investors who bought these deals. Now, isn't it criminal behavior?
That's all that these big corporations do. They just get fined and re-offend.
And, you know, the fact that all of these conservative bloggers and these right-wing websites and right-wing news sites have just been going after all the Occupy Wall Street and Occupy Detroit and everybody else.
They can't take it.
It gives you an idea. Remember, I'd go through this litany of how the conservatives, and you got to look at what the word means, conserve, what is, and how they were... they were against the American Revolution. They supported slavery. They opposed the women's right
Absolutely.
To vote. They were for every single imperialist war, like the Spanish American War and all that. They were against labor unions. They were they were for segregation. I know they were Democrats, but they were still conservative. And they were against the women's movement. They were against everything. They wanted everything to remain as it is. So if the conservatives, well, first, if the conservatives would have had their way, ultimately, we would still be a colony of Britain.
Right.
And they say they're strict constitutionalists. So what would that mean? We'd be a nation that was a slave nation,
right?
That that had the franchise, the vote would be open to white propertied males.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So every point along the way, the conservatives had to say, no, we are not going to conserve reality as it's currently constituted because this group's getting screwed, or great masses of people are getting screwed. I'm thinking of the union movement in the 1930s. How virulently they oppose it and still do,
mm-hmm.
because they didn't want people to be able to have decent wages,
right.
and
negotiate whatsoever.
Yeah, because they love power, they love hierarchies, they love everybody above them and hate everybody below them.
Yeah. I mean, that's disdain, really.
This is the authoritarian personality.
Yeah, how did they get that way? I just don't get it.
Harsh toilet training? I don't know.
Daddy was they have a daddy complex.
That was like a theory in the 40s. Or
something. Was it really?
Yeah, that's where.
That's funny.
Yeah, but and repressed homosexuality. That's
well,
another one.
We know that one. Like Larry Craig.
Yeah.
All the conservatives who come out.
If you read between the lines and someone says, oh, this protester is grimy. Remember we were talking about ad hominem arguments, attack the man, mm-hmm. hominem man, rather than the argument. Couldn't somebody be grimy and also be right? Correct?
You can be.
So what everybody from the Nolan Finleys and what was that other guy? Now I've forgotten. I'm pleased to know Gallagher. What was his name? Anyway, these Detroit News characters, which is giving great and fair coverage, by the way. It's just the editorial department is run by this dinosaur. Well, that's the kind of mean to say, talk about dinosaurs like that. Like this Nolan Finley. They want to conserve things as they are. So what they do is they say that these people themselves are illegitimate. Once in a while, they may try to get the arguments, but mostly they try to delegitimize the people themselves.
Right. And it really is kind of sad and pathetic, really, when it comes down to it, these guys. And dangerous.
Yeah. You know, one of the things when I've been down to the Occupy Detroit encampment and just see people of all ages. By the way, this demonstration that was at the Bank of America on Friday, this had everybody under the sun. Very diverse crowd of age and race and gender. And very, very spirited, and, nonviolent. And then, what really pissed me off, and the Detroit cops had four horses out there, cops on horseback.
Mm.
Yeah, and that is so threatening. I don't know, you've probably never seen horses ride into a crowd of demonstrators. Very, very...
I've been around them, like at the big D.C. marches, they're out.
Yeah, there's absolutely no need for that. This was Bob King and the UAW had people out there.
They brought out the heavy artillery.
No pun intended. And the idea, the police were very nice. They didn't do anything.
Yeah.
And they were, they were very cool, and they've been very cool about
the whole time.
About the encampment and everything like that. But, it's like somebody threatening you, essentially.
Yeah. Yep. We're bigger than you.
Yeah, we're bigger than you. Okay, we admit that. But, in V for Vendetta, remember they said the people should not fear the government, right? And that's, the armed wing of it. And there's no reason that when there's no crime, when there's no need. The police down there on Friday said, hey, we need you to move here. And you know what people did?
They moved.
They moved there.
Yeah.
Right. So. Okay, we're going to take a break on a totally different subject, but we'd like your comments on this because, there's a whole big debate about what percentage of the American people support the Occupy movements,
mm-hmm.
Your opinion of them. Are you one of the people that have been down there? Or
do you think it's doing anything?
And that's it, and I think that's still up for grabs.
Or we can just do nothing, and I choose to do something.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right, so, Mr. Announcer?
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Jalene will be taking more of your calls right after this.
If you're a woman and you're sick and tired of watching your hair get thinner and thinner, we're about to challenge everything you think you know about hair loss. Because we're going to send you a risk-free trial of a product with an FDA-approved ingredient clinically proven to help stop women's hair loss and regrow hair. It's called Keranique. Find out how you can try it risk-free when you call 1-800-641-9352 in the next 10 minutes. you're going to be amazed by what you see. Because Keranique is formulated especially for women to help repair hair follicles, prevent premature hair loss, and regrow thicker, fuller hair. And it's sulfate-free, which means it's safe for color-treated hair. Ladies, it's finally your turn to be free from embarrassing hair loss. Call 1-800-641-9352 in the next 10 minutes. And try Keranique before you buy it. But hurry, supplies are extremely limited. For your risk-free trial, call 1-800-641-9352. That number again is 1-800-641-9352.
Did you know that if you're a woman over 40, you need to work out at least an hour a day just to maintain your current weight? An hour at the gym every day without losing a pound? That's ridiculous. Hi, I'm Steve Bostic, president of Right Size Smoothies, and when I heard that, I was shocked, because I know that if you feed your body right, you can lose weight in no time. That's why I'm going to let anyone who calls today try my weight loss smoothies for 2 full weeks. I'll even personally guarantee that you'll see the weight fall right off. To claim your 2-week trial, call now and receive free shipping and handling. The number is 1-800-644-1383. And now I've made my smoothies even better, because I'm going to guarantee the first 100 callers a 2-week weight loss trial. I'll even include free shipping and handling, plus my revolutionary blender bottle, absolutely free. But you have to call 1-800-644-1383. That's 1-800-644-1383.
I guess we got caught up in the crazy housing boom.
We had been in the house so long, we didn't want to lose it.
What these people share is that they all got in trouble with their mortgages, and they all called a certified housing counselor for help.
Our housing counselor looked at our paperwork and she knew something was wrong.
She understood what needed to be done, and she helped me work it out with the bank.
This is a free service. Call the National Foundation for Credit Counseling now. Call 1-866-687-6322 or visit mortgagehelpnow.org.
Do you owe $10,000 or more in credit card debt? Behind on your payments or barely making minimums? Do your massive interest payments have you running like mad in circles? How long can you keep it up? Stop running. Let the Thomas & Law Group carefully plan your escape. The Thomas & Law Group has proven itself for over 18 solid years, helping thousands of people like you and me reclaim our financial future. They have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau and offices nationwide. And the best part? There are no upfront fees at all. You won't pay a dime until the job's done. No upfront costs, no monthly fees, no banking fees. No other law firm does that. I'm a paid spokesperson, not a lawyer, and every case is different. But really, if you owe $10,000 or more in credit card debt, call the Thomas & Law Group right away for a free, no-obligation consult with a trained legal analyst at 800-460-3160. Call now, because you're tired of running in circles. 800-460-3160. 800-460-3160.
Homeowners, how do you find the right contractor when you want something built? How do you find the best service professional when you need something fixed? For any type of service for your home, go to the most trusted website for pre-screened home pros. Just go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Service Magic is a free online resource that instantly connects you with pre-screened remodelers, maids, repairmen, and many other home contractors. If you need a plumber, electrician, painter, or any other home pro, visit fixitfast.servicemagic.com. It's easy and it's free, and it's the smartest way to find neighbor-rated contractors in your area. Over 10 million homeowners have trusted Service Magic for their home improvement and maintenance projects. So hire a pre-screened home pro with confidence. Go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. fixitfast.servicemagic.com. That's fixitfast.servicemagic.com.
Hi folks, Peter Epstein, president of Merrick Financial, the Gold People. With the changing economy, you probably know how important it is to protect your wealth. But did you know that gold can give you an edge when other investments are down? At Merrick Financial, we make it easy to get the right gold at the right price right away. Surveys show we beat other major companies' prices by up to 20%. That's 20% more gold for your money. The Merrick guarantee is simple. We'll beat any advertised price on the products we offer. And we guarantee every piece of gold is individually inspected to assure the highest quality. Call Merit right now and I'll send you our gold investment guide absolutely free. Find out why so many people choose Merit for gold. Call right now for your free gold guide.
Call 1-866-906-6634. Call right now for your free gold investment guide. Call 1-866-906-6634. That's 1-866-906-6634.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Julene Jordan.
All right, thank you very much. Ahmadinejad.
Ahmadinejad.
See, you thought we couldn't pronounce that.
We did it.
Hey, welcome back to our second segment here. I'd like you to join us at the number that Mr. Announcer just gave you, 313-298-WRIF.
It's 313-298-9743.
And what just slipped my mind? Oh, yeah, here. I've run into a lot of people down in Grand Circus mm-hmm. Park where Occupy Detroit is, and there's this elaborate tent city being set up there now. And you were mentioning earlier about how it was Wednesday and Thursday.
The
rains were so bad, the winds were high. And they've had all these tradesmen come down there because the union movement is heavily supporting it,
yeah.
Including electricians that I knew, guys in the IBEW,
really?
Yeah, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers that used to have a woman I know as president, the International Brotherhood, right?
Right.
And also riggers and some of IATSE, which is the stagehands union. What would that be? The International Association of Theatrical something. Stage and thumb. Anyway, so they've been helping, you know, they do a lot of rigging. Right.
Yes.
So they're making this encampment fairly permanent and secure. But anyway, and they have everything from, you know, food and not entertainment. What do they call it? Trying to think of all the different, but they have tons of different committees set up, and they meet all the time. Education, outreach, and
that's great.
Yeah, it's
a
little.
I got to get back down there this week.
It's a little village, but I ran into a listener. His name is, and I know there's about four Kevins waiting on the line, this was Kevin who's not on the line, and he said that he wanted to tell. This is what he left as a message. He wanted to tell Peter and Jolene that he still wants to do a T-shirt for the show. Which is Night Call, right?
We need that. That would be fun.
And Sarah and Athena, who are answering the phones at 313-298-WRIF, said they both want one. So I don't know.
Oh, great.
Yeah, I'll tell you, Kev. I mean, I'm not trying to put this all on you, because if you make them individually, they're really expensive, like $25 or something like that. You know, so I don't expect him to
put that bill.
Oh, but he said that he was, and he was, he's a large man. He's probably about 3 or 4 inches taller than I am.
Uh-huh.
You know, and what am I?
You're not a short guy.
5'3"?
No.
Everyone looks tall. No. Yeah, so he was probably 6'2 or something like that. And he said that down at Grand Circus Park, he said he had problems with Lions fans that were coming from Ford Field, and they were getting called bums. Well, they were the Lions fans. Everybody in Detroit are bummed out because the Falcons beat Yeah, I mean, the Lions had how many in a row? Four wins in a row, and then
it's three, I think.
Four,
and then I don't know. But
yeah, and then two losses.
Lost
two losses in a row. So, Kevin, don't take it personally. You know, that was just venting. You know,
mad Lions fans.
Yeah.
There's nothing worse.
Yeah, because I was there in the in Grand Circus Park when the Lions fans were going through Grand Circus Park.
Yeah.
And they weren't hostile or whatever.
Right.
So, you know.
They became hostile.
3 or 4 beers later and a loss.
Totally.
Hey, you bunch of bums, get a job.
That's funny.
So, pardon me. Let's see. Well, actually, a couple of people want to talk about Wall Street, but I want to get Sean from Novi on first because he's been waiting a long time. Sean, you're very patient. I appreciate it. Hi, it's Peter and Jolene. You're on the air.
Peter, good talking to you. First time, long time.
Okay, thanks.
Touching on Occupy and also the education, what you were talking about earlier, do you think there's an inflated demand for a higher education, say a college degree now?
You know, I don't know. That's a good question people have put forth the idea that these days you go to college, you come out of there with anything from about $25,000 to $100,000 debt.
Yeah.
You are really far behind. I was talking about that last week, just through some fortuitous circumstances that I wound up when I got married, when I was in my early 20s, with $5,000. And, you know, I said I had won $5,000 in a lawsuit. I wound up with $3,000 because, you know, the lawyer takes the other.
Sure.
So some people have said, hey, you know, you miss 4 years of earning or more if you go get a graduate degree, plus you wind up with this huge debt. That's what you're talking about, I assume.
Yep.
Well, you know what, though? Tell me, are you at a point where you have to make that decision?
Well, right now I'm just a community college student working and debating on whether to further my education or just stop at a junior level college. It just seems like once you get a community college or even a high school diploma, you're making minimum wage. And then if you spend all this money on a bachelor degree, you know, you might be making 15, 16 bucks an hour.
Well, yeah, except if you think about it, $16,000 an hour still only comes out to 30. And I mean, I know that's not chump change, but that comes out to $32,000 a year. I mean, it's not a grand sum in the scheme of things. But you know what? It is about the median. It's either 32 or 36.
Would want to make that
half the people in this country are making less than that. So some people are probably saying, hey, wait a minute, man, I'd sure love to make that. You know, when you probably from your parents and when I was in school, the idea was there shouldn't be any limit to the education you get. And every step of education you get probably increases your earning power all the more. Mm-hmm. We're in a real jam now. And I don't know. I guess, intellectually, I'd say, yeah, get as much education as you can. Practically, I don't know. I mean, you don't want to wind up coming out of school and owing 50 grand, right?
Yep.
Well, one of the things that I was talking about, I'm surprised this hasn't taken off because in other countries, and also, you know, Michigan State used to be free because it was what they called a land grant college. And even though I went there for the life of me, can't remember exactly how that ties into the government giving grants of land. You know, they gave Indian land to settlers and all. But why there isn't a move in this country by college age people to have free college tuition. I mean, when we talk about this, I always say if I said we were going to charge you for high school, you'd think I'd lost my mind, right? But there seems to be no qualms about charging young people and their families extraordinary sums to get what everybody says is necessary. That's what it's not a luxury. You know, it's not saying, hey, everybody should get, a nice new car just because they live on the United States. Everybody feels that an education, an educated populace is a plus for the entire nation. So why isn't that a village proposition in the sense, it takes a village? I mean, there's certain aspects to life that are crucial for a healthy community. We no longer have a healthy community in a whole. I mean, there's some people that are doing just fine and could be, a third or 40% of the country. And then as soon as you, say, get down to the 60th percentile, it begins to fray. You're still maybe at the middle class, but then as you drop every percentage point, the worry about finances, the security of income, the availability of medical care and all that begins to drop. And if you think about it, we're always now, we say we're the 99%, and then you got the 1% of the financial elite that's controlling all our lives. There's also a 1% on the bottom. I mean, you can imagine that.
Yeah.
So you got on one hand, you got people say the head of, NBC Universal or something like that, making $36 million a year. And then you got somebody else on the bottom that's making $3,600 a year.
Yeah, that's true.
So, Sean, maybe what we can do is ask other people what, because I'm sure lots of people are facing that, parents, people your age and all that.
Yeah, the decision, do I go back? Yeah. What do I do?
And let me speak harshly, not to you, but it's really a load of crap that a young person that's starting off in life has to even be faced with this, that you can't really settle on the kind of, occupation or learning path or interest and just that's it. I mean, the way it used to be, where you could actually 30, 40 years ago at Wayne State University, a year's tuition was about $300. It wasn't that like $300 a credit hour or something like that.
Yeah. Expensive.
And as we said, we're dropping off $2 trillion for wars. All right. Thank you, Sean. Appreciate your call. Yeah. If other students or people, students are in their, I don't know. I just lost the train of all that. But if parents, people like that, got anything to comment, 313-298-WRIF. Here is Trevor in Utica. Hi, Trevor. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. I just had a couple comments on what you were talking about with Occupy Wall Street earlier.
Yeah, you know, Trevor, can you hear all that snapping and crackling and popping?
Just say it real quick, Nathan.
Yeah.
Basically, this has been planned for the last 8 months or so. There's a whole website that's been anonymously planning every protest.
You know what?
There's actually a lot of other things I've been planning besides just this protest.
Trevor, wait a minute.
Call us back.
Try calling us back. I don't know whether it's your phone or where you're standing or whatever.
I think it's a connection problem.
Yeah, I think it's a connection problem.
And we'll take your call. We'll let you finish.
I want to hear this, so I'm hanging up now, but we really want you to call back. I want to hear what you have to say. It sounded interesting. All right, here is Tom. Tom's calling us from Minnesota. You got your parka on yet, Tom?
No, I don't have my parka on yet, but I'm not one of the people that's sleeping out overnight there.
Where are people sleeping? In, like, Minneapolis?
Well, right downtown Minneapolis, there's this plaza that has a huge county, the Hennepin County government building, and then across a big circular fountain is the Minneapolis City Hall, which is, you know, like a 125-year-old castle kind of building, really.
It's beautiful. I've seen it.
This is Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
This is Minneapolis. And then behind the government building, there's a big grassy knoll it's only about 180 feet in diameter, and it is a hill. It's not completely flat, but it's flat enough to pitch tents on. That's where those tents were, if you heard about the people getting, the tents getting crunched up. They didn't arrest anybody, but there was about 20 tents. But, I mean, just functionally, and the county saying we can't have any structures, but in order for people to assemble, to get together the petitions of redress, they need to take care of themselves. They need to be intense. What I'm trying to push, and we have a bunch of ideas, and I don't know where things are at. You know, it's... the county is the only people that have their, you know, that are rigidly saying no, no, no. But I think the way that we might be able to get through the winter is if we pitched 99 tents and then we had the Plaza Hotel in Minneapolis where we made reservations and had people from all over Minnesota come down and just spend a night.
Oh, there you go.
That way nobody's going through this, you know, duress, or there's nobody that's sticking it out for 3 months in sub-zero.
Well, you know, Tom, there's a friend of mine who's a prof at NYU in film studies, and he's a great photographer, and he sent me a whole bunch, and one stuck out, and it was a young woman holding a sign saying, "Sorry for the inconvenience, we're trying to change the world."
That's great.
And the idea of these encampments, I mean, there's tons of encampments around the country of the homeless now, and when, as you know, President Hoover, the president before Franklin Delano Roosevelt, was presided over the beginnings of the Great Depression with the same policies that are sinking us now, they had what they called Hoovervilles. So these were these temporary and what became permanent encampments of people that had lost their homes and had no jobs, and people that were what they called tramps, that they were migratory workers. And when people see them now, and I mean, well, the reason that stuck out is, you know, it's really nicest when you don't have tents and camps and what have you in the middle of your city, and you don't have big demonstrations blocking off streets and all that, mm-hmm. and you don't have, you know, contentious politics. But as you use the language of the Constitution, Tom, that the Assembly for Redress of Grievances is a right we're all guaranteed, and I wonder how else they expect us to speak. In fact, they might say, well, you could go vote for somebody. Well, the people that are doing all this may vote in as well. But it seems to me that there ought to be enough latitude within public policy to not set these, you know, NYPD gone wild cops on these, you know, young women with pepper spray and these supervisors punching. You know, they're just totally out of control. Or in Denver, they arrested all these people. They arrested all these people in Chicago's Grant Park. That's what happened in 1968 at the Democratic Convention. And why? And, you know, oftentimes that individual cops will act in a mean way, like the way all these white shirt did in New York, the commanders. I mean, they're just pleased to get a chance to punch somebody or
use one of their little weapons.
Yeah, or what have you. But they are sent there. right? And there is a small percentage of the cops that go wild, that hate disorder, that love the idea of being able to hurt people, and that's unleashed on these people. There was this whole video. Did you see that video of the Marine in Times Square?
Yes.
Yelling at these police. I fought in Iraq. Why are you hurting these people? He was saying. It's very, very, I should have it on my website. It's so incredibly dramatic. And these police officers, and they're the blue shirts. They're the ordinary patrolmen on the beat. They aren't the ones that have been doing the damage. It's mostly been their commanders, the guys that are usually supposed to keep the lower ranks under control. So what? But ultimately, it's the Bloomberg, the mayor of New York, the mayor of Chicago. Oh, who was that? I guess that was Rahm Emanuel. Rahm Emanuel. Yeah. Ahmadinejad. Yeah. So the point being is, hey, you know. And I said last week, the history of the army being sicked on these bonus marchers in 1932, 17,000, 18,000 World War One veterans that were attacked by the army, led by Patton and Eisenhower and MacArthur. Why wouldn't they just be allowed to stay there?
Yeah, what was the name of that?
The bonus.
Bonus Army.
The
Thank
bonus
you.
Army, yeah. Gosh, and if you can say, well, they're doing this or they're doing that, that means there got to be some negotiations. And if the occupiers are doing something that's harmful to the larger community, and almost always they're not, then that has to be addressed and that has to be dealt not with force, not with that kind of violence that we've seen so often practiced on protesters, but rather by understanding that everybody out there, no matter what you think of them or what you think of their clothes or their hair or you know, their standards of hygiene or whatever most of this is crap and fancy and fanciful stuff that meets people's stereotypes. But even if that's the case, they're fellow citizens, they're fellow community members, and they deserve the rights that we're guaranteed. All right, Tom, thanks for the update from Minneapolis. We're way late taking a break. We got our second hour coming up. Let's see, Kevin and Trevor and Tristan stay. Oh, yeah, Trevor, sorry. We're going to get back to you next because you got disconnected. And a lot more as well.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jolene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
Are you ready to update your flooring? Well, don't miss the Lowe's Floor event going on now through October 31st. Come in today and get free Stainmaster carpet installation with the purchase of any Stainmaster carpet and pad. Or check out tile and laminate flooring for only 68 cents per square foot. For these and more great values, check out the Lowe's Floor Event, now through October 31st. Lowe's, never stop improving. Offers valid through 10/31. Some restrictions apply. See store for details.
Do you own a car you no longer want, and you don't have the time or energy to sell it? Donate your car to Heritage for the Blind. Your donation is tax deductible, and your car will be towed away for free. Call 1-800-943-1356. Heritage for the Blind accepts cars, trucks, vans, and boats. It doesn't matter if your vehicle runs or not. Call now. Your donation will help those in need. Heritage for the Blind is a nonprofit organization that helps the visually impaired live fuller lives. Call now to donate your car, and as a special thank you, you'll receive a free 3-day vacation voucher to over 50 locations. Call Heritage for the Blind right now. Call 1-800-943-1356. Donating is easy, it's tax deductible, and your vehicle is towed away for free. Plus, you'll get a free vacation voucher by donating. Call 1-800-943-1356. 1-800-943-1356.
Is this on? Thank you. All right. Good morning, students. This is your principal speaking. Please listen closely to the following schedule changes. First period will be replaced by sleeping in. Second period will be replaced by warm weather. Third period will be replaced by belly flops. Fourth period will be replaced by goofing around. Fifth period will be replaced by batting leadoff. But there will be no changes to lunch. It will be in session every day.
School may be out for summer, but lunch is always in session. If your kids rely on subsidized school meals, call Gleaners Community Food Bank of Southeastern Michigan at 1-866-GLEANER or visit feedingamerica.org/summermeals.
A public service announcement brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Are you trying to lose 30 pounds or more? Well, what if I said you could lose that weight simply by taking one all-natural capsule a day? Intrigued? Then stay tuned for an important number.
If you're trying to lose over 30 pounds but don't want the counting and complication of diets, you can be among the first to try an amazing, proven breakthrough in weight loss. A once-daily capsule that can help you lose weight in days. For a 30-day risk-free trial, call 1-800-504-9756. Acai Fresh is one of the healthiest ways to lose weight because each capsule contains natural ingredients, including green tea extract. You'll boost your metabolic heart rate, allowing you to shed pounds in days with just one capsule a day. Be among the first to call for your risk-free trial. Again, if you would like to lose 30 pounds or more by taking just one all-natural capsule a day, call for the risk-free trial, 1-800-504-9756. That number again is 1-800-504-9756.
Are you an inventor? Or do you know an inventor who would like to attempt to have an idea or invention patented and submitted to industry? For free information on how to get started, call InventHelp toll-free at 1-800-762-7000. InventHelp is America's largest invention company. Their referrals have helped inventors secure more than 7,000 patents, and they can provide free inventors information for you. Find out how to record your invention's date of origination and get an informative brochure and other material of interest to new inventors. Get started by calling 1-800-762-7000. Even if you have an idea for improving an existing product, you'll want to get this free inventor's information from InventHelp. Find out how to try to patent your invention and submit it to industry. Call now to get your free inventor's information. Call 1-800-762-7000. That's 1-800-762-7000.
Debt is like a cancer. It painfully eats away at your peace of mind and the quality of your life. As your debt spreads and grows, it kills your ability to get a loan. It can even kill your chances of getting a mortgage or even a job. But now you can eliminate your debt before it kills you. At the Transforming Debt into Wealth Center, we've shown over 2 million people how to eliminate their credit card debts, car payments, student loans, even their mortgage. Our debt-free Bible will show you some of the most successful debt-eliminating secrets in the world. You can get out of debt, no matter how much money you owe or how much money you make. The truth is, the debt-free Bible is free and contains secrets to helping you kill off your debt and live completely debt-free. For your free copy of the Debt-Free Bible, call now while a limited number of copies are still available. Call 1-800-337-1713. For your Debt-Free Bible, call 1-800-337-1713. 1-800-337-1713.
So we're back, and we got some more music coming up in just a second. But first, this news just came in. Right now, the government and private banks are liquidating houses. Now, these are homes that have been foreclosed, confiscated, or repossessed, and they may be sold for little or no money down. Here's a toll-free number so you can find out how to get a free list of these foreclosures. 1-800-923-1051. 1-800-923-1051. It says here, every house must be sold. The government and banks are very motivated to sell these homes, and they may be sold for little or no money down. Looks like there's currently over 400,000 foreclosures in the database being liquidated now. Homes may be sold for little or no money down. Ask how you can get a free list of these foreclosures by calling Hot Props at 1-800-923-1051. Call 1-800-923-1051. That's 1-800-923-1051.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
All right, thank you very much. It's our second hour. Welcome to it. You can call that number. Get on the air. I think we might actually have a line open at 313-298-WRIF. And I forgot at the beginning of the hour, last hour, as we always do, to give also our email address, or did you say
no,
that?
We didn't.
Calltalkyes@yahoo.com, calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Also, our Facebook, facebook.com/nightcall, and be
come
a friend.
Over, yeah.
Yeah, come
we're
on.
We're having a good time over there. We got an email from Garrick in Garden City. Oh.
One more thing, sorry. Yeah. That also, thanks to Sarah and Athena, we will have our podcast available at noon today, Monday.
Yes. Correct.
So I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, that's fine. Garrick in Garden City said, speaking on the topic of the Iraq War, which we've been talking about.
Which we started earlier and saying is over.
Over.
The troops are coming out. Thank you.
Yes. He said he's dumbfounded by the cheers that George W. Bush got when he threw out the first pitch in tonight's World Series game. I had heard about that he had done this. I mean, he got all these cheers. And he said the man lied to the American people, leading to a deadly and costly illegal war. Agreed. That man should have been brought up on charges of war crimes. Scary to see people cheer that man, knowing the truth behind the W era.
It must have been in Texas.
Yes, the Rangers.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah. The Rangers. Hey, I want to get to your calls. One of the things I was talking about earlier as the manner in which all of these conservatives, blogs and news sites and what was the other websites have been just trying to smear all the protesters, all the Occupy.
Yeah.
Wall Street and Detroit and Windsor.
Dirty little hippies.
Yeah, did you say Lansing? Where did you say the Lansing?
Lansing is, I think it was Roulet Park.
Yeah. Yeah,
and they're calling it Solidarity Square.
How about this is the New York Post, right? And is this the Murdoch? Not Murdoch. Am I saying his name right? Yeah. Murdoch, the guy that owns Fox News.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Is that his name?
Rupert Murdoch?
Yeah, Murdoch. Yeah. Didn't sound right. It's like Ahmadinejad.
What are you, tripping, man?
Yeah, I'm tripping, man. Here's the headline in the New York Post. Protest mob is enjoying rich diet. So this is what I wrote Rebecca Rosenberg, who is the writer for this. I told her she'd be ashamed of herself. I said, probably your masters demand that you, they don't write the headlines. So protest mob is enjoying rich diet. But here's what she wrote. They may sleep in the park, but they eat like kings. Hundreds of grimy protesters laying siege to Wall Street and stuffed into the now smelly Zuccotti Park dine each night on gourmet meals prepared by a former hotel chef. Chef using only the finest organic ingredients.
What the thing is these farmers are supporting by giving them all of this produce and meat and everything like that. And this guy has been out of work, I believe. And
yeah, he is.
So he's cooking for everyone. And she's chastising those grimy people for eating donated food that happens to be organic and sustainable and all of that.
Somewhere or other in here, she's talking about how the people they claim to be representing will be eating Hamburger Helper. The idea is, though, that everybody should be enjoying a rich diet, right?
Sure.
That's what it's all about. And somehow then that makes everything that they are saying illegitimate because they're eating, well, because they're eating salmon cakes and spaghetti bolognese and roasted beet and sheep's milk cheese salad and wild heirloom potatoes.
Because it's from farms.
Yeah, right. I don't get it, though. What should they should be eating Hamburger Helper, I guess. You know, I hate, let me look at our
hippie list
of commercials here. Do we have Hamburger Helper as a, no, nobody's,
okay, good.
But, no, nobody should be eating Hamburger Helper.
Well, you got to do what you got to do, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
The people who are on programs.
No one should have to, is what I'm getting
right,
at.
Right,
that
yeah.
Everyone should have a rich diet, not rich in the sense that gives you the gout, but
yes,
rich in the sense
fresh food, healthy food.
Exactly. All right, 313-298-WRIF. A lot of you have been waiting patiently for a long time, so let's get back to our calls. And sorry, Trevor, I keep forgetting that you got disconnected. Trevor, you're back on the air. Welcome.
Hi, can you hear me now?
Perfect.
Much better.
Perfect. Go ahead.
I was just going to say something about the Occupy Wall Street that, like, not too many people are aware of. That whole Occupy movement was actually has been anonymously planned for the last 6 to 8 months online, along with all the rest of the protests around the entire world. So it's not just in America. This one's going on in Europe and parts of Asia.
Yeah, Trevor, we said last week that it's on every continent except Antarctica.
Now it's on Antarctica.
It is on Antarctica?
Yes, it is. As a matter of fact, I need to find that. Posted on our page.
Because it's the website. It's like whatistheplan.org. It's a whole massive forum for organizing all these different plans. And there's a couple different operations that are also going on. it's just kind of been interesting to watch all of this from the beginning, because I was kind of part of the initial phases of coming to Occupy Detroit, because it's been in the works for the last couple months. And somebody finally got around to actually making flyers and doing it and everything, which was nice.
Well, Detroit was a little late coming. I was wondering when it was going to happen.
I was actually surprised that this one actually got pulled together. Because for a while it looked like it wasn't going to happen because there was not too many people in support of it online. But there's a whole forum that's been basically planned. Every single organization, like Occupy, whether it be in like Chicago or whatever, it's basically been planned on that one website.
Well, also in New York, famously, now I think the magazine Adbusters, I think you can go to adbusters.com or adbusters.org, incredible magazine. They put out the call. Also, when you mention the word anonymous, the group Anonymous, the hackers group, has put out calls for it as well. So, yeah, so again, just like in North Africa, and there's actually a great video as well as of both Secretary of State Clinton and also President Obama congratulating the people of Tunisia and Egypt and the other countries that have stood up to dictators, talking about the suppression of popular will just won't be allowed in the modern world. And they show like the New York cops beating the crap out of people. So, yeah.
Oh,
well, have you been taking part, Trevor, in the one in Grand Circus Park here in Detroit?
Unfortunately, I couldn't be there at the start of it because I actually had to fly down to South Carolina on that weekend. But I intend on going there this weekend when I have time, because I go to school full time and I'm super busy with all that stuff. So I got that whole debt that you guys are just talking about. So I go to a really expensive school.
Yeah, that's one of the things. And you know, when I talk to individuals like I did earlier, the guy that was trying to debate whether to continue on in the community college, and I said I'm surprised there's not a movement. I don't know if I got that out or not, but I often say that people should at least take care of their own self interest. So one of the things that should come from they always say there's no demands. One should be free college tuition. And if they say, where are we going to get the money? Well, we're spending probably enough to finance all of that just to continue these contractors in Iraq, even though the American troops are coming out in the war in Afghanistan. Still not enough? Well, let's start digging into the military budget, which is still putting troops all over the world, which is absolutely unnecessary. And an individual, if I say maybe even to you, Trevor, or to the other guy, it's not like you're going to say, I got an idea, I'm going to go out and start a mass movement. I don't know how movements start. I mean, they're mysterious. They're not there one day. Well, I know what you're saying. A lot of them are long in the planning. But every single movement in history, the abolitionists in the early 19th century, I mean, somewhere or other, these people got together in a room in Boston and said, we have this ugly stain on the United States called chattel slavery, and we have to organize to end that. And same with every other movement throughout American history that extended the rights of people and recognized every individual of having worth, and that these categories can't be used to deny people rights. All right, Trevor, maybe I'll see you down there, and Jolene as well. All right, yes. Thank you. Appreciate your call. Let's see. Here is Tristan in Dearborn. Hi, Tristan. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, Peter, Jolene.
Hi.
Hello.
With the Occupy Detroit that's going on?
Yeah.
You know what? It's personally, I think it's gaining strength and everything.
Uh-huh.
I do, too.
I'm finally glad to see people getting out, letting their voices be heard, and to see that things are getting shook up by this. And something for you, Peter. You've been having trouble pronouncing that name as of late.
No, I haven't.
Try pronouncing a phrase used by me and a friend of mine, which is Deus Ex Machina.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Yep. Which I was actually going to use that when you guys answered and say Deus Ex Machina Occupy Detroit.
What is that?
That's, remind us. Is that
Deus Ex Machina translates over to God's Praise the Machine.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yep.
Okay, well, I'm Ahmadinejad. I can say
Ahmadinejad.
I'm Ahmadinejad.
You're cured.
I'm Ahmadinejad. I can do it. All right, Tristan, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Here's Joe in Monroe, the home of Fermi 1 and 2, and George Custer, General George. Go ahead, Joe. You're on the air.
Hey, how are we doing, Peter?
We're doing good.
Yeah, you know, I think our biggest problem is the protesters, not the protesters, it's the mayors and the our stupid media.
Well,
vilifying them.
Except but for us, again, of course, yeah.
You know, the media vilifies anybody who speaks against the establishment.
Yeah.
You know, when they, the Tea Party, if you didn't agree with them, hey, I didn't know Tea Party is, but I didn't see anybody being a racist, but they were called racist, loons, anarchists.
Well, because they pretty much were.
Yeah. Well, you know what, though? I have to say, this time around, they're actually, I'm astounded that a lot of the media has been pretty decent. I was reading that one from the New York Post. Anything that Rupert Murdoch has touches is going to be just a big lie machine for the Republican Party and, you know, the worst public policy imaginable. But the Detroit News has actually, in its reporting, been pretty good. The Free Press has been pretty good. The TV channels.
It's great. I mean, it makes me happy.
WWJ.
More than most protests that go on out there. They are giving way more to this.
Yeah, I agree.
Peter, Chuck called.
All right, thank you, Joe. I appreciate
thanks,
Joe. Your call.
Chuck wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com, longtime listener, and he says he is an economic refugee in Florida. He graduated from college in 83, owing $18,000 for a degree in broadcasting,
right.
He says, which led nowhere. I joined the Army, and they paid off my student loans, but I ended up in the Gulf War. I'm now one of millions of uninsured Americans, but by virtue of being a combat veteran, I get free health care from the VA.
I was going to say, yeah.
That is good for me, but I feel every American deserves the right to health care. Student loans paid off for service to the government. He believes our government should pursue such a policy, and he supports Occupy Wall Street, he says.
Well, you know what's interesting? I was said to the college student, as I often say, we would think it would be crazy if we said that people had to pay for high school, right, or
yeah.
for junior high or something like that. And the same thing. Now, we give health care to seniors. I mean, if you want to get Medicare, you got to pay a little bit. But so it's a national health program, right?
Sure.
We give it to vets. They have essentially socialized medicine. The government pays for all their medical care. Mm-hmm. Not should be. A friend of mine is a vet. He can't even get out of bed. He's got such bad back pains and he can't get an appointment till November. So what those have to be funded more. And we have medical care, government socialized medicine for the very poor as well. So if you extend free school up till, I mean, what's the arbitrariness here? Why does it go up to grade 12? And then, hey, you're on your own, and you owe these banks tens of thousands of dollars. Why is it that medical care is good for seniors and for vets and for very poor and not for all of us? That's it. You know,
yeah.
And I want to talk a few more of these calls, but I also want to talk about Walmart, one of the biggest retailer in the world that's attacking their employees again. Yeah. Here's Will and Ken. Hey, Will. Hi. You're on the air. Welcome.
I actually do have a problem with this Occupy. And the reason is that last day, Chuck, you know, if you don't like something that's happening with your officials, you still got the right to go assemble when they're having a meeting and speak your mind, okay? And second off, if there's a job that's a problem.
Wait. Oh, I didn't get the first one.
What?
What's the first one? I didn't get number one.
Number one is just if you got a problem with your officials, who's in charge of it, last I checked, you still have the right from when they have a city meeting to go assemble, speak your mind, tell people, you know.
Yeah, that's
what
your
leaders.
This is more about Wall Street and big banks.
Okay? You don't sit there and, you know, line up the streets and blame and stuff like that. And another thing, you know.
Why don't you? What's the illegitimate part of it? Well, I mean, you could say, well, maybe there's a better tactic that maybe we all ought to organize. Instead of doing this, we should organize around elections or I didn't get the other part about going to meetings, but this is what people have chosen as a mode. What's inherently wrong with it?
What's inherently wrong with it?
Yeah.
You can do something better with your time. I'm more worried about work too, but I'm not out there, you know, occupying the territory. My job is to look for a job, all right? I ain't got the time to waste, okay?
Well, you know what? I hate to tell you this, but there's not enough jobs out there to supply
everybody.
Yeah. I mean, I forgot how many, what's the total number of unemployed, but there's nowhere near that number of jobs there, right?
Do you have a job?
Well,
That's why I said my job is to look for a job right now.
So you don't have a job?
By a street.
So you don't have a job?
So you're complaining about these people who want who have your best interests at heart.
Really
do you
does.
Know that? Yes,
what
they
about
do.
A guy in New York that got on TV and said, I quit a job to participate in this. I mean, if he was going to
do wait,
job,
do you, let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a question. Hold on. Do you watch Fox News? Just yes or no?
I watch, no.
Good.
Okay.
Well, listen.
That's a start.
One of the things, though, I got to tell you, Will, is that if you have a coherent, say, like political party, and even like the Democrats and the Republicans aren't totally coherent because they got different wings that have different ideas and all that. These are a group of individuals. So there could be somebody that would say, hey, you know, I'm going to quit my job in order to go down and participate in this. And I'm concerned there's not enough jobs for everyone. Well, I mean, maybe on the face of it, it seems a little personally inconsistent. But we're talking about a much larger social problem where there's not enough jobs. And the jobs that are there don't pay a decent wage. You got, you know, people making $8.50 an hour trying to raise a family. I mean, as I said earlier, there's probably near to 60% of the people in this country that are financially unstable because of not making enough money, of they're not sure whether their job's going to be there, they don't have health insurance and what have you. And I'll tell you, if somebody told me they're quitting their job in order to help organize to get jobs for everybody and to reduce the disparity of wealth in this country, I'd say that's great. You know, you look at these people, go back and, you know, remember your history books or go, you know, look online and look at the young people that are taking part in Occupy this city and that city. And then take a look at the young people that went to the south of the United States in 1960 to help register African Americans to vote
right.
And to overcome segregation. They look like the same. They got long hair and they say, And all the Southerners say, they got these grimy, hippies that ain't got a job. How come they're not up working and looking for work?
Unsophisticated.
So, don't give them such a hard time. Thank you, Will. Appreciate it. 313-298-WRIF is our phone number. Oh, by the way, I was quoting earlier from that article in the New York Post that was complaining that what a good diet was being served, what great meals were being served
in New York City.
In New York City at Occupy Wall Street. Well, in the meantime, Richie Rich Kid is going to a restaurant called Romera. And what they have, let's see here. This guy used to be a food writer for the New York Times, Frank Bruni. He says, I've been prodded to dab a special scent on my wrist before savoring my salad.
What?
To proceed through the five microscopic canopies before me from left to right as if they were words in a sentence that would lose all meaning if scrambled. To exhale in a particular way as I chewed an avant-garde popcorn cluster so that the smoke inside billowed from my nostrils. Romera, New York, is the finest first restaurant, I was told, to make a memory of my water. By the way, a dinner is $250 per person.
Ooh.
Before drinks or,
ooh.
Yeah, all right. So here is the New York Post.
This is going on.
Complaining about people that are socially protesting because they're eating good food and not saying a word about,
the $250 per plate.
Let's see. It says they have a pairing of each dish in an 11-course meal with a lukewarm flavored water in a lidded glass. One water might be infused with leek and radish. It sounds terrible. You know, it's like
I think it sounds kind of good, actually.
Really? It sounds like you rinse your vegetables and then drink the water. Another with jasmine and dried seaweed.
Sounds gross.
Yeah, he says, I love seaweed.
Hate seaweed.
Oh.
Gross.
Most taste like indecisive teas, commitment phobic broths. What are commitment phobic broths?
Saying that doesn't want to be full flavor.
Oh, or pond runoff. Feel free to smell them, said my server, as if I might otherwise feel jailed. And to taste them, he paused, make a memory of them.
Oh, my.
So it's going on about all this.
That's funny.
Yeah. So,
but, you know.
No complaints about that.
Grotesque.
Oops, some lines opening up for you. 313-298-WRIF. Here is here's Tim. Tim's in Tecumseh. Hi, Tim. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Peter. Pleasure to talk with you greatly.
I was mentioning about Monroe being named after, not named, but the birthplace of General George Custer. Tecumseh, on the other hand, was named after one of the great Indian chiefs, right, of this region.
Yes, indeed. And actually, it's a beautiful statue they have down there.
They do have a statue of him? No, you're not talking about the Custer statue in Monroe.
Yes.
You're talking about
on the horse?
That guy's the ultimate loser. In fact, they
Wait,
hold on. You can tell, and I can't remember what it is, but there's different protocol for military heroes. And if they have both if the horse they're riding has both feet off the ground, that's real high.
Okay. If they got one
hoof off, that's something else. And I haven't seen that statue. We used to go down there and protest against Fermi II. Isn't his horse, both feet are on the ground, and the horse and him are looking down, or is that another statue?
It's kind of on hind legs, but the bottom line is that it's not that. It's just I think it's a pretty statue of a horse. I mean, it's not that. When I was a child, I really you know, I enjoyed
pretty horsey.
You know,
but Tim, that's not what you want. That's not what you want to talk about, right?
No, absolutely not.
Go ahead, though. You're on the air.
Yes, I'm calling. Years ago, I called and I talked to you, and I told you I was a conservative.
Yeah.
I told you that, but I was a passionate conservative. I believed in the care for the elderly, the poor.
Yeah. Doesn't make you sound like much of a conservative, Tim.
I know. You told me that last time.
Oh, my God. That's so funny.
I know.
Have you changed? Well, have you changed at all?
I haven't changed. I had told Peter before that my beliefs stem from my convictions from my biblical raising, that you know, my conservative background, that I must be righteous in all that I do and be trustworthy and everything. And I'm not saying that those who are not.
Yeah, because we're not, and we're all those things.
Yes.
Right.
Exactly. And I'm not saying it. And more and more as I go through life, you know, I see things going on where this occupying of Wall Street. Now, as I get older, you know, I'm 44 now. I started listening to Peter when I must have been 19. So it's been 25 years.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, we were both 19.
I've only called once before.
Wow.
But the thing is, and that was about, like I said, 8 years ago. And
welcome back.
Yeah, thank you. And I guess my biggest concern is where I see us heading in the future. And I don't call myself a conservative anymore or a liberal or anything. I'm concerned with mankind in general. I see this, everything taking place. And
that's a good idea. I mean, because what do they say?
You have changed.
Well, they say there's an old saying, if I know your church, I know your beliefs. And one thing is that you get hung with every crime that particular category has ever committed. Whereas if you say you're committed to larger concepts, ethical concepts of, say, peace, justice, I don't know, equality, things like that. It's a little. Then you're in the company of I was mentioning earlier, Nelson Mandela and Martin Luther King Jr. and Gandhi and people like that. You can't go too wrong there. If you say I'm a conservative, well, then you know you say, well, what about Michelle Bachmann? You know, and I don't know. I mean, are there bad liberals?
There's got to be.
Who are they?
But they're the maybe some of the baggers who are liberal.
There's no liberal baggers, no.
No?
I mean, you could certainly say, you know, communists and the kind of crimes that have been committed in the name of communism.
Well, there's some slimy liberals, you know, like in Congress.
Yeah.
There's some slime balls.
Yeah, there are. All right, Tim, I got to move on. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Call in every 25 years or so.
Talk to you in 25 years.
Yeah. Boy, we got a lot of open lines now, suddenly. Should we pose a question? What's your question?
What were you going to talk about marijuana, so, like an hour ago?
Oh, come on. You're grasping for straws.
No, that was an hour ago.
Interested.
Well,
yeah.
I'm interested in what you were throwing down there. No.
We ought to have...
No smoking.
That ought to be our... I wonder if I can say this.
No.
Yeah, I can.
What?
I was actually over a guy's house that had 24 plants growing.
Legally.
Completely legally.
Really?
Yeah. And, you know, when you were aware of it, as you walked up his driveway...
You could smell it?
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. But
yeah,
it's
legal.
All legal.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
He's a caregiver.
He's a caregiver or a care... You know,
Taker.
He takes it himself.
Right.
Yeah. All right, here's the deal. Support for marijuana legalization hits all-time high. According to a Gallup poll, a record 50% of Americans now support legalizing marijuana, up from only 12% in 1969.
My gosh, really?
Yeah. I mean,
it's been a few years, but that's huge.
That's weird. 12% of people in 1969.
69, which there was a lot of weed being smoked.
Well, I was going to say, weren't there more than 12% of Americans smoking marijuana then?
They were afraid to speak out. They were focused on other things.
Well, it's interesting. I never saw that whole Ken Burns thing on Prohibition, the documentary.
I didn't either.
But I read the book. I read the book that it came from.
Okay.
And the gangsters, like, say, Al Capone, they wanted to keep Prohibition illegal.
Oh, so because they were making so much more money.
Yeah, they made more. They would give money to like senators and representatives in the National Congress.
They were so badass.
That were
they?
Dry. But then on the local level, they would give money to what they called the wets, the people that would either, the politicians and the cops would either take bribes or would just didn't care about enforcing that stuff. Let's see. Not surprisingly, support for legalization is highest among liberals.
Yeah, right.
And young people.
All those occupiers.
Well, only 31% of people over 65 say pot should be legalized. Now, wait a minute. So 65, what is it? I can't do the math here. 40. So it was 42 years ago. So people over 65, they were in the, I don't know, and they were there in the 60s.
Yeah.
16 states allow the use of marijuana for medical purposes, even though the Obama administration says such use is illegal under federal law. What do you mean? Says it is.
It is.
It is. There's no getting right. But
that was poorly written, that sentence.
Yeah. By the way, I don't want to take any calls, Sarah and Athena. People say, "Well, man, I don't know why weed is illegal because." I would take a call on why people think it should continue to be illegal. Why that legalization is wrong, bad.
Oh, okay.
Bad public policy.
All right.
Okay. All right. But that's it.
Being a little controlling, Peter.
You know, we can, let me see. Let's see. Kevin and Kevin, everyone's named Kevin tonight. Kevin and Kevin and Willie and John. There was actually a great blues singer named Little Willie John.
There was. Didn't he just die recently?
No, he died very young in probably the early
60s. They all kind of had that same name thing going
and on. Sue Whitehall, who's the music writer for the Detroit
this
News.
This is what it is.
Just I interviewed her. That's right. We had it on.
Knew there was something that happened with him recently.
Great book.
Okay.
All right. So all of you, hold on, and we'll be right back. You'll have the honor of being in our final segment as Night Call continues.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
Here, Detroit News Alliance beat writer Bob Wojcicki talking everything Honolulu Blue and Silver. Brought to you by St. Joseph Mercy Health System. Discover Remarkable at stjoeshealth.org. Catch Wojo Monday and Friday mornings with Drew and Mike exclusively on 101 WRIF.
Hey, Detroit!
The Riff. This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Julene Jordan.
All right, thank you very much. It's our last segment. Get in on the action by calling the number you just got. David in Walla Walla, Washington. What a weird name for a town.
Walla Walla.
Walla Walla, Washington.
I like it.
Yeah.
Now, Walla Walla, that's kind of a cool area there.
There's a prison there.
Well, I think there's more than that.
That's good. Anyways, David is listening out in Walla Walla, and we were talking earlier about the protesters at Occupy Wall Street. They were given this really wonderful food. And
donated by local growers.
And the writer in this far-right-wing paper said, you know, they're not using Hamburger Helper. And David writes, Hamburger Helper is not too bad, just got a lot of doctoring. Yum.
Yeah, you have to add things to it.
We were also talking about
General Custer.
The statue of General Custer.
Oh, his feet are down, and the head is down.
Okay. Oh, you're looking at the photo?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Is there's some...
Meaning he's low.
You know what? But that's not the statue I'm thinking of. I think the statue is on Belle Isle. Of a general, Civil War general named Williams. And then not only, and that's the one that has all four hoofs on the ground, the horse's head is dipping, and it's like in a rainstorm, you get the idea, and the general is, he's got his head down with his hat on. So, let us know what that's all about, as well. Got a couple of great interviews at 1 a.m., I recorded previously. I'd be damned if I can remember even a single one of what they are, and I don't have it on my website. But if they're on the air, they got to be good.
So, that's right.
Yeah, right. Here is Willie. Willie, hi, you're on the air. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Farmington Hills.
Well, hi, you're on the air.
Love your show.
Yeah.
Just a comment on the occupiers of Wall Street. I think that sooner or later there is going to have to be a more organized political argument. And the reason why I say that is because even right now the conservatives are starting to muddy the water, so to speak.
Sure.
They're a bunch of bums. They don't know what they want. They don't deserve to eat. They don't really want to work. Here's the potential that, you know, that they might get violent. They're nothing but a mob. But I remember that when the Tea Party got started, of course, you know, they had Obama's face looking like Hitler and the Joker, and some of them were carrying guns and they were spitting on people and all of that. But to me, when I hear 99%, to me, it's clear as a bell. You know, it's you know, I think of education. I think of our school system. The cost of a college education, the fact that when some people come out of college, they come out $80,000 in debt and can't find a job. And in my opinion, I think that in itself is a national security issue, because it's diminishing our ability as a country to compete.
Well, I would have stopped the sentence sooner and just said it diminishes our country. Period.
Exactly.
Period.
Exactly.
And we are headed towards sort of a third-rate country. There'll be a third of us. I don't know where you or me or Jalene or anyone else listening is going to wind up in it. They remember I was saying earlier that when you start getting below the 60th percentile, you're starting to get into financial insecurity. So it's going to be the top third is going to be, you know, just doing okay, just swimmingly, and that's where all the commodities are going to be exchanged and all the glitter, just like it always was. And you can see a million different little indications of that. Well said, Willie. And I'm going to start moving people along quicker because we're getting towards the end of the show. But I appreciate everything you said. You know, I had intended, and I'm not going to do it now, is that Walmart, those SOBs, have cut health care benefits for
part-timers.
People. Yeah.
Mostly.
Why wouldn't, full-time people, too.
Oh, my.
And some of them now are going to have $5,000 deductible, people making $19,000 a year.
My God. Really.
These people,
what good is it? What good is it?
Well, you know, they're not doing so well. The five Walton heirs, these kids that never did a damn thing. The Waltons, by the way, is one of the richest families in the world. They're worth... Yeah. Depending on how the winds are blowing on Wall Street, $85 to $100 billion. That's more than Gates, more than Buffett, more than Senor Slim from Mexico, who's the richest guy in the world now, and all of that. And so they just look at there, and there's a bunch of guys in, $2,000 suits saying, we got to cut the benefits from these guys. I mean, how can they live with themselves?
They have so much. They don't need to do that.
The other thing is, why aren't these people in Walmart out in front saying we have to have a national health care program so we don't have to cover any of this? So like every other industrialized country, we have...
Get out there with your sign. They need to get out there with their sign.
They do, but
there's a grocery store chain that I won't mention on the air, but they have out where I take some classes.
Yeah.
They have people sitting out there every single day. I'll tell you off the air.
Okay, good. Here's John in Ann Arbor. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. Good night. Hello, Jolene also.
Well, hi.
I'm going to be very short, sweet, and to the point.
Okay.
I'm watching Piers Morgan replay him interviewing Herman Cain.
Right.
This shouldn't be relevant, but I'm going to throw it out there anyhow.
Go ahead, sure.
I'm a black guy myself, okay? Mm-hmm. When I listen to Herman Cain, I swear I hear P.T. Brown.
Well,
yeah. That's all I want to say.
Well, let me just tell you a couple of things. Here's a couple of things that are worth saying. You know, the Koch brothers, these are these billionaires that funded the Tea Party. Well,
yes.
So who was it? Randy Rhodes, his talk show show host.
Yeah, I'm familiar with her.
So she calls him cocaine.
Well, Randy gets kind of carried away.
She does.
And, I love her.
And then the other thing is, you say Herman Cain 999 instead of his ridiculous tax program that would raise taxes for you and me and the rest of us listening, and cut it for the rich. You say 999, except you say it with the German spelling, which means no, right?
He tried to save his butt. He came to Detroit and stood in front of
the old train station
and tried to say, well, no, but we're going to exempt the really poor.
That's good.
Yeah, he's trying to.
Hi, John. Thank you. Call up again, please. One of the things that I always wonder about the Obama camp, I wonder who they're hoping will be.
I know
Republican
who they
candidate.
Can beat.
They probably
they
would.
Can't. Mitt Romney is the only one who has a chance of even getting close to.
Yeah, I think they probably hope anybody but Romney.
Yeah,
I mean
I
they
do
hope
too.
That any one of the whack jobs.
Yeah, but the whack jobs aren't going to get in there. I think even Republicans can kind of see it.
That yeah. I mean that Cain or what's her name, Bachman or Santorum. I mean what a cast of characters.
Rick Perry. My conservative father.
Yeah.
We really try not to talk about politics because it can be ugly. So I actually said, and what about this Herman Cain? And he goes, I like him. And I'm like, that's because you're a business guy, Dad.
Yeah.
But what about that 9% sales tax? That's crazy. I go, what about your baby? What about me?
Well, one of the things that Herman Cain has said, that this 9% sales tax, which isn't going to go over too well in states like Vermont, New Hampshire, that don't have any sales tax.
Oh, yeah, really?
Right.
What a dummy.
Yeah, so it's not going to be on used goods. So there's this whole thing with our other favorite talk show, Stephanie Miller's. They have this whole thing about buying used food.
Oh, God, I haven't heard that. That's funny.
I was coming down. In fact, I was actually coming from that talk that I heard at the Occupy Detroit encampment. And there's a big, huge billboard: Salvation Army, worn us lately. I mean,
oh, clothing.
Have you worn our clothing?
I know a lot of people doing secondhand shopping. I go. There's a really cool place in Ferndale that has secondhand, and why not?
Hey, I know two people. One is a teacher at a prominent prep school, and another is the head of this archive at the University of Michigan.
Right.
And both of them do only, they say, you're crazy to buy full price for,
yep,
for
clothes.
And the guy who teaches out in the sort of West Bloomfield area, he, whenever he's, he says, hey, man, I got you this shirt. And I said, wow. And he said, it's cost me a quarter. And it's just nice. I have some of my favorite shirts.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Okay. Whoa. Yeah, we got some callers waiting. Let's get to them. Here is Kevin in Clarkston. Kevin, hi. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
Yeah, I was just wanting to comment about the situation in America about the
marijuana.
Let me guess. Pot.
Kevin.
What?
Did you burn one? Did you burn one before you got up here?
Come on, put it together. Put the sentence together, Kevin. You can do it.
Are you with us?
Okay.
All right.
About what was going on in America, with the people rallying in each of these cities.
Yeah.
About the fat cats and I grew up in the 60s.
Yeah.
Right. And I haven't seen such a thing going on. anymore since then. And I really haven't seen anything like that, you know, anymore since then.
Well,
there has been some surrounding Iraq and Afghanistan, but not like this.
No, nothing like there was demonstrations in the 1960s around civil rights and the war and what have you. Hundreds of thousands of people would show up for these things. But, you know, Kevin, you never know what's going to happen. Like I said earlier, I don't even know, as I frequently do, I don't know if I finished my sentence even. I said, you don't know what's going to happen with this Occupy movement. Could just fizzle. I mean, I was talking to some people down at the Occupy Detroit, and they said, hey, they're going to be there right through the winter. Well, what about 5 degrees below zero?
Oh,
woo.
Man.
Yeah. And will they do it? Or it could,
they can't light a fire down there, can they?
Yeah, there were some.
Were there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Contained kind of thing?
Yeah, it was in a container. And so it could, but this could be step one in this historical epoch that could be like the 1960s or the 1930s or, you know.
I mean, what else are we supposed to do? Just to take it up, you know?
That's the other option. And the people aren't doing that anymore. We're mad as hell, and we're not going to take it anymore.
That's right.
Right. All right. Kevin, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Kevin.
Yep, indeed. Let's see. Here's Kevin in Garden City. Hi, Kevin. You're on the air.
Hey, what's going on, you guys?
Nothing much. What's up?
Yeah, I'm just, you know, I'm not very political, but, you know, I think... politics is crazy, you know. These politicians, they want to, you know, tell us to convince them that they're the person. And, you know, as me as just a regular, you know, lower middle class, I guess I don't even want to classify myself, but.
Whatever.
I'm sorry, that sounded funny.
Yeah. The fact of the matter is that how's a person that's 17 getting paid is the same as a 35-year-old man?
It's happening.
Or woman. The bottom line is, you have minimum wage. You should have it for every 5 years. Minimum wage goes up because you're older.
I mean, one thing, we had a ridiculously low
minimum
wage. We ought to put about another $5 on it or something like that. But I agree. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Appreciate your call. Here is and some open lines as we come towards the end of the show, so grab it quick. 313-298-WRIF. Here's Robert and Taylor. Hi, Robert. You're on the air.
Hi. Three quick points.
You know what, Robert? We're getting this. Can you call us right back?
Yep.
Okay. Do that. I wonder if that is on our end. You know, this has happened a number of times over the last couple
of
weeks.
I don't know.
Well, we'll talk to
my cell phone gets kind of funky once in a while.
Yeah. Okay, here's Don in Sterling Heights. Hi, Don. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going, Peter? I saw an ad recently from Ron Paul. It was something on one of my Facebook subscriptions it posted. He was basically comparing the Iraq war to what if the Chinese came into Texas and did the same exact things to us in Texas, in the name of democracy.
Yeah.
And being a veteran myself, I looked at this and I'm like, how is just such blatant fear-mongering allowed to be even in the political arena at all? I mean, I know people are dumb nowadays, but come on.
You think you're being critical of the Ron Paul ad?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. But
yeah.
I mean,
well, that's okay.
Yeah. I mean, for real, it's like he's trying to scare everyone into saying, well, this is going to happen. They're the communists.
Well, you know, for instance, the United States has bases all over the world, and as you know, being you were part of the apparatus, I mean, has Africa Command, South America, Asia Command, all these bases all over the world. We're the only country in the world that does that, and I have to say, I use that kind of analogy myself. Can you imagine, for instance, if China was fighting a war in Mexico and in Canada at the same time? China was fighting, you know, trying to establish a government that was sympathetic to them, you know, in Mexico. And another one, they were fighting another war in Canada. I mean, for one thing, we wouldn't allow it. We have something called the Monroe Doctrine that says that other powers can't even come into this hemisphere. So I think that's where Ron Paul is coming from. And that's the only area that he makes, he's opposed to the drug war, that he makes any sense in whatsoever. So, I mean, I want to give him that. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. We got Robert back. Robert, hi, you're on the air.
Can you hear me better?
Yeah, I don't know what the deal is. Perfect.
I think it was on my end. We have got a bad phone system here at work.
Okay,
anyway,
what's up?
Three quick points. In regard to the statues, the generals on statues,
yeah.
I'm not positive, but I believe that if the statue is on it, the horse is on its rear two legs, that means that general died in battle. If the horse is on all fours, it means that he died, but it wasn't during conflict.
Well, wait a minute. Everybody dies.
Well, what I'm saying, but actually died in battle.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And if the horse is on all fours, yes, he died, but it wasn't during an actual battle.
Oh, and someone just wrote in and said, according to Snopes, that this is all hogwash.
Oh, well, I could be wrong.
we'll look it up.
My second point.
Wait. Before you leave that one, I have to say, I always thought that there was a hierarchy of how many feet were on the ground as well. Well, why would they? I mean, you couldn't imagine, like, General George. What was his middle initial?
C. George C. Custer.
No, you're thinking of George C. Scott. Is it George C. Custer?
Yeah.
I thought it was C, too.
All right. But you can't imagine somehow let's just call him General George Custer, the Battle of Little Bighorn, big loser, made it, you know, apparently just made some catastrophic decisions that led his men into this, you know, being wiped out. So you couldn't imagine him, like, his horse up on two legs in some triumphal pose, right?
No, it was just a symbol.
I got you. Okay, well, actually, we are a little short on time, so give me the other two points.
My second point, in regard to Walmart, they actually encourage their full-time and part-time employees to seek medical...
Medicaid.
Medicaid.
They pay them so little that they're actually eligible for it. So in a way, they are they're being subsidized by a national health program. Hmm. So I don't get it. Why don't they, I mean, all these big corporations and any company would stand to, benefit in the, well, hundreds of thousands to the tens of millions, depending on the size of them, if they would go for a national health program. I am so short on time. Real quick, just give me your third point premise.
Third point, I was asking more than anything. With all these protesters, what is the end result? I mean, how are they changing anything by just sitting out there?
Well, okay, that's an excellent question. Well, I have time even to, I don't even know if I can answer it because it's pretty amorphous right now. And what they're beginning to do, well, I'll tell you a story. They have some buttons. In fact, a guy I know made them that say F Wall Street, and they have that whole word out.
Yeah.
My dear wife, it was wearing it on the outside of her coat, going into retail establishments. And you know what? George Armstrong Custer. That is true.
Okay.
That she was wearing it, and you know what the reaction of people, and here's everybody's calling in from Monroe now, that the reaction of people to her F Wall Street button was rather than getting arrested or thrown out of play, everybody was saying, where'd you get that pin? Can you get me one? Yeah, I agree 100%.
Right,
your button is so cool.
That's great.
All right, so it's created a consciousness.
The ripple effect, too. You know.
And it's given us the capacity to understand that the locus of our problems isn't in our inability to get a job or to do better, or that there must be something wrong with us because we're only getting $9 an hour and then hence we're a failure, but rather it's inherent in the system where you have this elite that controls all of our fates and controls the political system. And then how do we move against it? I don't know. All right, let's see, here is Matt is in Monroe. Hi Matt, how you doing?
Hey Peter, how are you?
Good.
Just a couple of things. From what I understand with the statue thing, I guess a long time ago, it was either the Romans or the Greeks, when they made their statues, they had some sort of system for the ranking of the generals or whoever they were portraying in the statues.
Yeah.
The folks that have made the statues here in the U.S., from what I understand, didn't really follow that. So.
Okay. But isn't it a little weird, given that that Custer is almost synonymous with military arrogance and error and all that, to have a statue of him?
Absolutely. And he was a complete doofus, too, from what I understand.
Yeah.
In terms of education, I guess he graduated a last in his class.
Right. So a statue doesn't make a bit of sense. All right. Thank you very much. I'm going to rush through again. Sorry. Here, Mike is in Monroe. Mike, what do you think? You're on the air.
Hello?
Hi. You're on the air, Mike.
Hey, Pete, if I could just throw something real quick and then, I'll see your comments off the air.
Sure.
Yes, I would agree. The guys at the very top, Blank, Fine, and a lot of these guys, you know, Madoff was prosecuted. Those guys are beyond the pale, and they have billions, and it's crazy. But, you know, as far as some of the Occupy Wall Street people, they talk about basic fairness, and they don't just real quick, you know, I have a friend that I went to Wayne State with that he's a radiologist now, and I partied, and I can remember calling him when we were kids and just like, hey, let's go out. He's like, no, I got to study. I drive a semi, and he makes, I'm sure, about 10 times what I make. And
right.
He worked hard, and he, you know, he's not a rat. He gave me the shirt off his back. He's a really nice guy, and he just, so some people, just by virtue of what they do and because they're intelligent, are going to make, you know, very good livings, and that's just the way it is. And I don't condone.
Well, we're talking more about Wall Street,
yeah,
about the big corporations, not the individual person who has an individual success story.
You know, a long time ago, there was a book or a series of books called Everything I Know I Learned in Kindergarten. And one of the rules was, you know, you can't bring candy to school unless you can share with everybody. Now, we're not talking about every bit of money shared equally, but when you have people, when you have, I don't know, a couple million people in this country, including, you know, vets and all that are homeless, when you have people that don't have medical care, on and on like that, and you have other people making $36 million a year or are worth billions. I mean, Jalene and I live in a city that makes, whose budget for this coming year is $19 million. I mean, there's people, in the entertainment industry, in the, you know, Wall Street and a lot of other places. Mm-hmm. They make more than that a year.
Yeah.
And, here we're worried about, can we rehire? Well, I shouldn't say we're not worried about it. We got, our city workers on, 4-day weeks. They're worried about whether we're going to be able to provide the basic city services and all of that. And the idea to somebody, whether it's a liberal movie star or these right-wing Koch brothers that are worth billions, is that if we let's be real extravagant in terms of rewarding people under a capitalist system and give people millions of dollars in compensation, maybe up to about 3 million. And then you start having 90% taxes like they used to have under Eisenhower or when they first put in the income tax back in, what was it, 1913 or something right around there, where the only people that got taxed were the real wealthy. In fact, I'm, you know, every time I say it, $50,000 tax deduction right off the bat. So unless you're really driving a lot, Mike, you know, under that system, you probably wouldn't pay any kind of federal tax like that at all. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Let me see. I got just very. Ooh, you know, we could do that.
We can do one more.
Yeah, Regina from East Point. Go ahead. You got about 60 seconds.
Okay.
Hit me.
You know what? The preface to my call is that people are falling through the cracks. My husband and I are not. We put two children through college,
yeah,
and we took out a home equity loan. Our home isn't even worth what we took out.
Wow.
And we have family and we have friends that are helping us too. I mean, it's no big deal. I can eat peanut butter and jelly for the rest of my life. But, you know, I'm so glad that they have good jobs in Michigan and they live 25 minutes away. They both have health insurance. My husband and I don't. Luckily, we're healthy. And I have about 50 tomatoes and 40 green peppers, if anybody wants.
Aww.
I would put them up. All right, Regina, we're completely out of time. I think what you're talking about is what America is facing and what we need to solve. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Athena, welcome back. Sarah, thank you so much, and thanks to both of you and those of the people that are taking care of the calls and also preparing our podcast that'll be available at noon today, Monday. Thank you so much for listening and calling. Jalene Jordan, thank you.
Time for bed.
What do you think? You want to take like 6 days off and we'll do it again?
Let's do.
Next Sunday. All right. Stay tuned. Got a couple of interesting interviews, and I'm real curious to see what they are. They're just ahead.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
Is it time for a new roof? Call Sears Roofing. You can save $500 if you call right now. Just call 1-877-938-1414. Hurry, offer ends soon. Not available in all states. Installation provided by Sears Authorized Licensed Contractors. License information available upon request. Get your roofing job done right. Call Sears Roofing now. You can save $500. Call now. 1-877-938-1414. Sears.
If you're a woman and you're sick and tired of watching your hair get thinner and thinner, we're about to challenge everything you think you know about hair loss. Because we're going to send you a risk-free trial of a product with an FDA-approved ingredient, clinically proven to help stop women's hair loss and regrow hair. It's called Keranique. Find out how you can try it risk-free when you call 1-800-641-9352 in the next 10 minutes. You're going to be amazed by what you see, because Keranique is formulated especially for women to help repair hair follicles, prevent premature hair loss, and regrow thicker, fuller hair. And it's sulfate-free, which means it's safe for color-treated hair. Ladies, it's finally your turn to be free from embarrassing hair loss. Call 1-800-641-9352 in the next 10 minutes and try Keranique before you buy it. But hurry, supplies are extremely limited. For your risk-free trial, call 1-800-641-9352. That number again is 1-800-641-9352.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. You know, if you talk about the Vietnam War, increasingly it's talking to particularly younger people, but maybe just even people under 50. It's like talking about World War II. People understand it was a significant war for the United States, particularly since it lost, even though having it sometimes half a million men on the ground in Vietnam, 2 to 3 million Vietnamese civilians dying, and yet it was an ignominious defeat. But in many ways, in fact, not in many ways, in a very specific way for this conversation, the victims of that war, both our soldiers and their families and Vietnamese and their families, the war continues. A new book is out. It's called Scorched Earth, Legacies of Chemical Warfare in Vietnam. That's talking about Agent Orange. Again, I always think a lot of us, that word really resonates. For some of you, probably, you might think, is that like a secret agent? No, we'll get to that. And my guest is Fred A. Wilcox. He's the author of the book, Scorched Earth. And there's a simultaneous release of the second edition of his book, Waiting for an Army to Die, The Tragedy of Agent Orange. And Fred Wilcox is associate professor of writing at Ithaca College, and he's the recipient of numerous awards for his scholarship, including the Chapel of the Four Chaplains Humanitarian Award. That was presented to him on two occasions by the Vietnam Veterans of America. That's very important. I suspect very important to him as well. We welcome Fred Wilcox. He's at his office in Ithaca. Welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
And am I correct about that sense of, well, is pride the right word of the recipient of award from the Vietnam Veterans of America?
Oh, absolutely. Particularly since I am not a Vietnam veteran. I actually fought in the, against the war rather than in the war. But I've been a veterans advocate for 30 years, and veterans know I support them wholeheartedly and always have and always will.
How do they feel when they find out, you were one of those draft-dodging, pinko, draft-card-burning, long-haired, whatever.
So. You're right. Well, I'm not sure if I was any of those things. But, you know, some early on when I was doing Waiting for an Army to Die, some of the one or two veterans would get very angry until they realized that I was on their side, that I was supporting them, that I was totally behind them. And but generally, most veterans will say, "Well, you know, I'm glad you weren't there. You know, I didn't want to be there either, and I'm sorry I was." So no hostility, because we're working on this thing together. We have been working on it for decades. That is the Agent Orange tragedy. And they know, because I put myself out there. I've written, I've talked, I've taught, I've marched, everything I could to try to get Vietnam veterans, for example, some help from the United States government.
Well, we need to talk about all of that. Fred Wilcox is my guest. The book is Scorched Earth, Legacies of Chemical Warfare in Vietnam. And people say, wait a minute, chemical warfare? I thought that was all stopped by the Geneva Conventions in the late 20s, and that's like from some other war, World War One. But tell us about Agent Orange and why you say that that qualifies as chemical warfare.
Sure. Let me just say real fast what Agent Orange was, because a lot of people, it wasn't a secret agent. It was a combination of two commercial herbicides that we call 2,4-D and 2,4,5-T. So the chemical companies, Dow Chemical and others, mixed those two herbicides together, and then the military just put those herbicides, or that herbicide, into a barrel, and they painted an orange stripe around the barrel, and that's why it's called Agent Orange. There were other agents, Agent White, Green, Blue. Specifically, at least in the beginning, that the herbicide was used to destroy the triple canopy jungle and the mangrove forest. Why was it chemical warfare? Well,
but wait, let me interrupt you, but tell people, sure. Why in the world would the United States government be trying to, and they use the word then, defoliate, essentially destroy the vegetation of Vietnam, and you talk about the triple canopy. Explain that a little and,
oh,
and
sure,
the function.
Thanks.
Yeah.
No problem. The idea was, in theory at least, to drive the enemy, that's the Viet Cong as we call them, and the North Vietnamese out of the jungles and out of the mangrove forest, because they knew the territory. That's where they lived. That's where they, traveled. They knew how to fight there. So they could fight. They could come out of the jungles and ambush and attack, and then they could disappear. They had elaborate base camps inside of the jungles and inside of the forest. So the idea was, if we destroyed the forest, if we destroyed the jungles, then we would drive them out, and we could kill them all with our superior firepower, and the war would not last very long. That was the initial military strategy.
And we're at I forgot to mention that, we're at the 50th anniversary of the first use of Agent Orange in Vietnam. Am I correct?
Right. Well, the first use of herbicides, but not long after the first use, about 5 years later. We were testing with various types of herbicides in 1961. That's when the United States military began testing. And the other reason I think we did that is because right away, fairly early on, we realized, that is, the government realized, that that war could not be won against an indigenous people fighting against a foreign invader. It just wasn't working, and the government in Saigon that we were supporting was totally corrupt, and they weren't going to win the war. So we had to figure out some kind of new weapon, actually, new way to fight our quote-unquote enemy there, and that was chemical warfare.
Yeah, and let's get back to that. Using chemicals as a weapon of war is actually considered a war crime. Go a little more with why is this chemical warfare, and if so, in your estimation, does it rise to the level of an international crime?
Well, it's chemical warfare because if you look at the 1925 Geneva Accords, which were written, established after World War One because of the use of the terrible gases there that destroyed so many people, the world community got together and said, well, look, we really shouldn't use these kinds of weapons in warfare, so let's write some sort of international prohibitions against that kind of warfare, and that's the 1925 Geneva Accords. Now, of course, the Accords 1925 do not say Agent Orange, you know, or herbicides. So some people, like the judge in the class action suit early on, I'll get into that later if you want me to, but they insist on saying, well, the 1925 Accords do not prohibit the kind of weapons that were used in Vietnam. Well, that's nonsense, because the kind of weapons, that is, the defoilants, were clearly biological and chemical weapons. Moreover, it wasn't just about killing the trees. We killed the food crops of the people there, the ordinary Vietnamese people. We realized at some point that the Vietnamese people were cooperating with our enemy, and we realized at some point that many of them were, quote-unquote, our enemy. So we decided clearly, well, okay, we'll destroy the rice crops and the fruits and the other things that they depend on for food. And children were starving in Vietnam. People were hungry in Vietnam. That in itself is a war crime. You cannot destroy civilian crops, food crops. That is directly prohibited by international law.
I don't even know if it's appropriate to say this, but this is really shameful, isn't it? I mean, it's. I was just thinking. I could barely come up with a question. It almost happens when I start facing all this. Noam Chomsky, the linguist and social critic, wrote the introduction to Fred Wilcox's book, Scorched Earth: Legacies of Chemical Warfare in Vietnam, and it is published by Seven Stories Press. And somewhere or other, Noam Chomsky has written that very frequently when you ask Americans how many Vietnamese civilians died during that, say, 1960 to 1975, and people just look blank. Most of us know exactly, or at least, you know, the round figure of how many Americans died. But I just wonder when, and my figure is from Noam Chomsky, that 2 to 3 million Vietnamese civilians died. And he said that sometimes people will just say, you know, because they've never thought about it, they'll say, what, a couple hundred thousand? And he says that would be like Germans, when someone's saying, how many Jews died? And they responded with a couple hundred thousand. I mean, there is this historic amnesia, isn't there?
Well, yes, and you mentioned earlier about young people under 50 not knowing. The thing is, the war in Vietnam officially ended in 1975, but it is not over. And why isn't it over? It's not over because at this point, 3 million Vietnamese people are suffering from the effects of Agent Orange, suffering from the effects of chemical warfare. 500,000 children are suffering from the effects of chemical warfare. All these years later, women in Vietnam are giving birth to children with limbless children, blind children. Not all of the women in Vietnam, but women who are exposed to Agent Orange and dioxin are, because the dioxin is still in the food supply and the water. So the war, you know, we say, well, the war ended, and why, you know, people have asked me, why, Wilcox, why do you keep talking about this? Are you obsessed by it? And I said, no, I'm not obsessed by it at all. What I want is some kind of justice for the victims of Agent Orange and chemical warfare. And until I think we get that, I think we should all talk about that, because our government needs to admit, yes, we did it, okay? We used the herbicides. We'll just admit it. We'll apologize to the people, and we'll try to help the people. But also, the chemical companies, Dow Chemical, Monsanto, the other companies, have profited from selling these toxic herbicides, these deadly herbicides, to the United States military. They need to admit what they did and say, okay, we made a lot of money from the war. We made a lot of money from selling these toxic chemicals. And we'll put some money aside for the victims, for the suffering people in Vietnam, for the millions of people in Vietnam who are suffering all these years later from the effects of these chemicals.
Well, there used to be a slogan. You mentioned the anti-war movement that you took part in, Fred Wilcox. And one of the slogans was, war is good business. Invest your son. And the corporations, of course, supplying the tools of the trade. And there's a great song at Woodstock by Country Joe and the Fish, of course. And you've mentioned the Vietnamese, but also here in the United States, and you've mentioned earlier, you've been an advocate for Vietnam veterans and their families and their children who have suffered as well, to the point where you've received awards from the Vietnam Veterans of America for your work. How is this passing down through the generations of American vets as well?
I don't think anybody knows that for sure. All we know is that there were a large number of people. Nobody's been able to count them. The government hasn't done the scientific studies they should have done of the effects of dioxin chemicals, Agent Orange, on the children of Vietnam veterans. But I can tell you this, Vietnam veterans are reaching the age of late 50s and early 60s, and they're dying. I talk to widows all the time, all the time. They email me. I meet them at various places. Oh, my husband reached about 58, 59. He got seriously ill, and he died. And some of them have died at a lot younger ages than that. So this all began, I started writing about it back in maybe 1981. And then my first book, Waiting for an Army to Die, was published in 1983. So that was just 8 years after the end of the war, maybe 10 years after some of these young guys came home from Vietnam. They were in perfect shape when they went over there. You know, they were athletes. They were young guys. They were teenagers, a lot of them. And they come home, and 10, 20 years later, they start to fall apart. Their immune system is damaged by dioxin, Agent Orange. It breaks down the immune system, and then you're susceptible to all these diseases. So these guys, you know, they're late middle age, but they're not old now. But they turn old long before their time, and they die of diseases that normally affect older, far older people.
The book is Scorched Earth, Legacies of Chemical Warfare in Vietnam. There's a foreword by Noam Chomsky, and Fred Wilcox, my guest and the author, mentioned his book, Waiting for an Army to Die, The Tragedy of Agent Orange. That's been released in a second edition, simultaneously published by Seven Stories Press. And a friend of mine, I was just talking to this morning, and I said I was going to interview you, and he said, hasn't the United States government finally fessed up to this and admitted that the maladies that these vets have been suffering were caused by exposure to Agent Orange? So I don't know the answer to that.
No, the United States government has finally, just in the last few years, begun to pay compensation for certain illnesses, a variety of cancers, diabetes, heart illnesses, things like that. But as far as I know, that does not mean that the United States government has said, yes, we're guilty of committing war crimes in Vietnam. Now, some people might say, well, what's the difference? The difference is that, as I said before, that the United States government needs to do this in order not just to help Vietnam veterans and their families, but the Vietnamese people. But I'd like to say something here. You know, I always say to people who again say, well, that war's over, and why are you talking about this? And yes, well, the veterans served in Vietnam and are going to die. Everybody dies. Well, this book is about, and all my research is about, and my trips to Vietnam are all about, the cancer epidemic in this country and other parts of the world. You know, we have a cancer epidemic in this country. Now, I think if you really don't believe that, the toxic chemicals cause all these diseases in human beings, go to Vietnam. The Vietnamese are very welcoming people. They'll welcome you. They'll talk to you. They'll show you around. They will not mislead you. They'll give you the scientific studies that they've done. And if you can come home from there convinced that the TCD dioxin and other toxic chemicals do not harm human beings, then okay. But what I'm concerned about here is the children, the future of our children, because in the last 20 or so years there's been a dramatic escalation in various kinds of cancer in children. And I'm absolutely convinced, I think a lot of people are growing to become convinced, that this is all about our environment. Our environment is inundated with the same kinds of chemicals that we used in Vietnam. So we're all being poisoned by multinational corporations that put profit in front of people. You know, the statistics are just astronomical. I mean, I always tell people, don't believe me, check out the statistics. 40-some percent of American males will get cancer in their lifetimes. Almost 40% of women. This is just unbelievable. And you can study it, as I have. If you study it, you'll see the rise in cancer in men and women and children is directly related to the last several decades of toxic pollutants in our air and water and food supply.
Well, particularly when you're close to industrial facilities that emit those. I mean, you can take an industrial map and a cancer map, and they're almost identical. But certainly in rural areas with the use of pesticides and herbicides. Fred Wilcox is my guest on the Peter Werbe Show. The book is Scorched Earth, Legacies of Chemical Warfare in Vietnam. If there were war crimes, there must have been war criminals. Are you looking for just sort of a truth and reconciliation situation, or do you think that there are those alive, there still should be like indictments? Take them to The Hague.
Well, not very many of them are alive. You know, McNamara died, and, you know, Johnson, Kennedy, they're gone. One person is alive, and that is Henry Kissinger. I believe, and I don't mind saying this at all, that he should be in the Hague for sure.
For about 10 different crimes. Man can't even travel to lots of countries. He would be...
right.
Yeah.
He's a war criminal. And if for nothing else, and Noam Chomsky will tell you this, what happened in Cambodia, the bombing, the saturation bombing of Cambodia, that was all about Henry Kissinger. But no, most of the people who were around Rusk and the other people who were the architects of the Vietnam War and who were the architects of the mass defoliation chemical warfare have passed on to some other world, if you believe in another world. But no, so they can't be held accountable. I'm not so concerned about holding people accountable as I am trying, for one, to get help for these Vietnamese people. You know, you go over there and you go into these tiny, tiny little hovels way out in the countryside, and they have the families have two or three deformed children, so deformed they can't go to school. Some of them are blind, they're deaf, they're retarded. And these families are trying their very best, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to take care of these kids. They're doing the best they can, but they have no money. They have absolutely no money. They can't work sometimes, so they're just desperate. And to think of all these millions of desperate people in Vietnam, and then to think that Dow Chemical and Monsanto have the nerve, which they do, to put offices. They have offices in Ho Chi Minh City now, you know, at least Monsanto does. My argument is, and I hope other people can join me, is convince these chemical companies, as I said before, you made the money, you made a lot of money, okay, you say you were just serving your country, you're just doing your patriotic duty, well, whatever you want to say is fine, but come up with some money. You know, $20 a month for these Vietnamese people would be like a fortune, $20 a month.
No. By the way, Fred Wilcox's website is fredawilcox.com. Well, you mentioned Monsanto being in the capital of the United Vietnam. The Vietnamese government is not real keen to push this, as I remember. Is it?
Well, they have the Vietnamese government has a mixed reaction, I think, to this whole chemical warfare. You know, they obviously want to expand business. They obviously want to promote their economy. And I've never said, because it isn't true, that all of the food and water in Vietnam is contaminated. That's not true. The contamination is located pretty much in certain places like the Da Nang Airport, you know, places where we had massive military bases. But they are, and I think there's probably a difference of opinion among officials there. How, on the other hand, they talk quite openly about it. They hold meetings about it all the time, Agent Orange. And they do want to help their people, and they know that how necessary it is for the international community to recognize the tragedy that occurred and the tragedy that's continuing in Vietnam.
Before time gets away from us, and it is quickly, Fred Wilcox's book, Scorched Earth, Legacies of Chemical Warfare in Vietnam, is accompanied by photographs by his son, Brendan Wilcox. So I assume the two of you traveled to Vietnam. The photographs, in many cases, are very disturbing. Tell us some about your trip and the photographs.
Well, yeah, I think the photographs are great, not just because they're by my son. My son went with me. On the second tour, I went to Vietnam to do research, the second time I went over to do research. And he traveled about, took the photographs. My son loves children. The children loved him. And, of course, he was absolutely shocked. He was absolutely horrified. He'd heard, you know, much of his life about the victims of Agent Orange, and he grew up with Vietnam veteran friends of mine, and their children. But to see the children firsthand and to take their photographs in a place like Friendship Village in Hanoi, or down in Da Nang at the places where they take care of the children, it's quite a shock. It's just a real shock because they're beautiful children, and they're ordinary children. I mean, if it hadn't been for Agent Orange, if it hadn't been for dioxin, they would have arms, they would have legs, they wouldn't be blind, they wouldn't have these big heads. So I think my son and I talked about the kinds of photographs we wanted to put in the book, and sometimes I don't think people mean to, but they go to Vietnam and they take the most horrific photographs of Vietnam victims of Agent Orange. We decided that because these children were just ordinary, beautiful children with missing arms or missing legs or whatever, that we would try to include photographs that, yes, would move people, maybe anger people, maybe even scare people, but they could also see that these are beautiful human beings. They're not monsters. They're not they're just wonderful little children who are victims of chemical warfare.
Now, you know, a few years ago, a friend of mine and I were bicycling in the area of France near Germany, and we'd go into villages, and people would just look at us hostily and what have you. And then we realized after talking to some, they thought we were Germans. For one thing, I had a Schwinn.
right.
So they weren't very pleased of, to welcome the descendants, even who they thought of people that had invaded them and caused so much problems is an understatement, right? But right. Why are the Vietnamese not, as soon as they see you, Fred Wilcox, and your son, Brendan, why are they just filled with rage, do you think?
Well, first of all, I think they knew that we were there to help them, not harm them, not to gloat over anything. And second of all, and they won't tell you this, they're very polite, and they're very unassuming people, but, you know, they won the war. You know, they drove the mightiest empire the world has ever seen out of their country after many, many brutal years. And so the second thing is that they just don't, they feel like the war's over. You know, they're not fighting the war. They're not interested in hating anybody, and they don't. They actually don't. But most important, they're welcoming. Like I said, if you want to go over and talk to them about chemical warfare, the scientists will welcome you, the doctors will welcome you, ordinary people will welcome you into their homes. They want help, and they want this thing resolved, and they love their children with a great passion. And the, one of the things they really want to see, they're scared now because they see the third and fourth generation of children being born. And they don't know when this is going to end. You know, is dioxin mutagenic? Well, nobody knows for sure, but it appears that it might be. It appears it might have damaged the genes of male or female. So, and the Vietnamese people just have no reason really to be hostile and angry. I mean, Vietnam veterans have been gone over there for years. Guys have fought there as Marines, and they're shocked when they find out because they're kind of afraid and nervous, of course, anxious. They were there during the war, and then they find that these people absolutely say, "Let's have a drink. Let's talk, and let's talk about what happened, and let's talk about who you are." And they care about the veterans here, their suffering. They're not just concerned about their own suffering. They're very concerned about the effects of Agent Orange. Believe it or not, I mean, it's hard to believe in a way, but they really care about the people who came there and killed their friends and killed maybe their family. They're very compassionate people.
Incredible story, and one that needs not to be forgotten, and a good place to start the remembering is with this new book by Fred A. Wilcox, Scorched Earth, Legacies of Chemical Warfare in Vietnam. You can go to Fred's website at fredawilcox.com. My website will have a link as well, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com. The introduction by a man who wrote so much when he was a young man and continues as he ages, wrote the introduction, Noam Chomsky. He says, meaning the United States, to our everlasting shame, current controversy over the Vietnam War focuses on the question, could we have won? He says the real question should be, what have we done? It's answered in the book Scorched Earth, and as well, a second edition of Fred Wilcox's book, Waiting for an Army to Die, The Tragedy of Agent Orange. Fred Wilcox, thanks for being with me on the Peter Werbe Show.
Thank you so much, Peter. I really enjoyed talking with you.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
Is it time to replace your home's carpet or flooring? Call Sears Flooring to get shop-at-home convenience you can trust. Sears Flooring brings the showroom to you with a wide range of carpet, tile, hardwood, and laminate. And if you call right now, you'll save 20%. Call for a free in-home consultation at 1-888-491-3939. Sears Flooring has many styles to match your home and your budget. Your new flooring will be precisely installed, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. So call Sears Flooring right now and save 20%. Call 1-888-491-3939. Offer ends soon. Not available in all areas. Installation provided by Sears Authorized Licensed Contractors. License information available upon request. Call Sears Flooring. You'll save 20% if you call now. Call 1-888-491-3939. That's 1-888-491-3939. Sears.
Debt is like a cancer. It painfully eats away at your peace of mind and the quality of your life. As your debt spreads and grows, it kills your ability to get a loan. It can even kill your chances of getting a mortgage or even a job. But now you can eliminate your debt before it kills you. At the Transforming Debt into Wealth Center, we've shown over 2 million people how to eliminate their credit card debts, car payments, student loans, even their mortgage. Our debt-free Bible will show you some of the most successful debt-eliminating secrets in the world. You can get out of debt, no matter how much money you owe or how much money you make. The truth is, the debt-free Bible is free and contains secrets to helping you kill off your debt and live completely debt-free. For your free copy of the debt-free Bible, call now while a limited number of copies are still available. Call 1-800-337-1713. For your debt-free Bible, call 1-800-337-1713. 1-800-337-1713.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werbe.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werbe here with you. You know, this is the 50th anniversary of the week in which Dwight W. Eisenhower, the President of the United States from 1953 to 1961, was made in his final speech, talked about the military-industrial complex. I bet every one of you listening have heard that phrase before, and probably a lot of you know what it means. Some of you may know exactly what it means, but I suspect there's a bit of confusion about what it all means. Everybody knows we have war industries. Detroit was the arsenal of democracy during World War II, and weapons production plays a role in the overall economy and what have you. But let's take a look at actually what Dwight D. Eisenhower meant by all of this. And we're going to bring to our microphones Gareth Porter. He is an investigative journalist and a historian specializing in U.S. national security policy. His most recent book is Perils of Dominance, Imbalance of Power, and the Road to War in Vietnam. And Gareth Porter is at his office in Arlington, Virginia. Welcome to the Peter Werbe Show.
Thank you, Peter. Glad to be on.
Do you think that's true, that people, it's one of those phrases that almost everyone's heard, but not everyone knows the exact definition of or can't really conjure up what it's entirely all about in an accurate sense?
Well, I think people have a general notion that this has to do with the military and people in the private sector, and that is correct, that what Eisenhower was trying to get at is there was a new power combination that made for a serious threat to American democracy and American liberties. And what he meant by that was that the military services, who were already, you know, extremely powerful, arguably the most powerful institutions in American society, had linked up with the arms industry and the military contractors who were getting the contracts to manufacture missiles and airplanes and tanks and so forth, had become political allies of the military, and together they constituted a new form of political power. Now, what people don't know, I'm sure, is that Eisenhower had originally intended in that speech to include the congressional part of this new sort of political power combine. He was going to refer to it as the congressional military industrial complex. He eventually decided against that, but in a way it's too bad, because it would have further illuminated the nature of that political power that he really did fear in terms of the future of this country. And you know, it's interesting that he began to work on the speech as early as 1958. He had been working on it for more than 2 years. So he cared about this very, very much. And the interesting question is why he, in fact, waited until his farewell address to bring it up.
Well, I want to talk about that for sure. Let's get a little sort of snapshot of President Dwight Eisenhower. Now, here was one of the most distinguished generals of World War II. He had spent his life in the military, so you would think that he wouldn't have any problem with a military-industrial complex, even if it was growing in power. Usually military men, like in any bureaucracy, the more power, the more prestige, the more people, everything that can accrue to a government bureaucracy, the better in the minds of the people.
Well, that's a very interesting point, an important point, and I'm glad that you've raised it, because Eisenhower, of course, as a military hero of World War II, once he retired from the military and entered politics, he then separated himself from the institutional interests of the Army, which, of course, he had been a part of, and he became a very different sort of political figure. He was, of course, as president, he had his own political agenda. He had a whole set of issues that he cared about, which transcended the interests of the Army and of the military services more generally.
Well, he ran as a peace candidate in 1952.
He did run as a peace candidate, and I would say even more significantly, throughout his two administrations, Eisenhower was very clearly determined to avoid a new war. He felt very strongly that it would be a disaster for the United States to get into another war. And you know, that war would either be a war against the Soviet Union, which would be the most disastrous thing to have happened to the United States, or it would be a brush fire war on the periphery of the Soviet Union or of China. And in either case, Eisenhower was absolutely dead set against it. He, of course, as I document in a book that I wrote, published a few years ago on the U.S. path to war in Vietnam, Eisenhower was very much opposed to the United States becoming involved militarily in 1954 when the French were suffering defeat at Dien Bien Phu, and some people in the military, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, or at least some of them, were pushing for the United States to enter the war, perhaps by dropping a few atom bombs on the Viet Minh troops. Eisenhower absolutely had no intention of allowing that to happen.
Let's be clear about that. That was actually advocated. I mean, this was one.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
That's right. And so that was really one of the first instances. It wasn't the first, but it was one of the first instances in which Eisenhower rejected the recommendations by the military leadership, by the Joint Chiefs of Staff, to either go to war or to threaten to go to war. I mean, there was a time in 1954 when the Joint Chiefs were recommending, calling for an ultimatum to the Soviet Union, saying if the Soviets didn't make the diplomatic concessions to the United States involving Eastern Europe, that that it would be a serious, there would be a serious threat to the regime in the Soviet Union, which clearly implied that the United States would make war on the Soviets.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to emphasize that Eisenhower was indeed determined not to get into a war, and in so doing, he found himself very much at odds with the military leadership on a whole series of issues, including with the, in the case of the U.S. Army, their desire to have more ground forces, to have a larger manpower, and to have the equipment that they would need to be able to intervene on the periphery of the Sino-Soviet bloc. That was a fundamental interest of the Army, and they pushed it very strongly, and Eisenhower simply said no.
Mm-hmm.
He cut their budget severely, cut their manpower below what it had been at the end of the Korean War, and essentially put himself at odds with the Army brass for the remainder of his two terms in office. And so there was a big campaign that the Army waged against him, which I would argue, along with the campaign that the Air Force waged against Eisenhower during his two terms of office, was the real reason why he felt so strongly about this this military-industrial complex, because they had really targeted him for abuse, for attack, both directly and mostly through the news media and through friendly members of Congress.
My guest on the Peter Werbe Show is Gareth Porter, and this week marks the 50th anniversary of President Dwight Eisenhower's farewell speech, in which he warned of the rise of a military-industrial complex. And Gareth Porter has just written the piece for counterpunch.org, From Military-Industrial Complex to Permanent War State. And one of the things that you say in it is 50 years after Dwight D. Eisenhower's 1961 speech, pardon me, on January 17th, on the military-industrial complex, that threat has morphed into a far more powerful and sinister force than Eisenhower could have imagined. Now, that's kind of, that phrase, kind of a tough pill for most people to swallow. Even in these days of deficit overrun, there's a little squeak about maybe we could reduce the military budget a little, but I doubt if they will. But sinister, I mean, that's a pretty strong word.
It is strong, and I think that it's absolutely justified by the record of the past decade or so in particular, where you have a series of developments in which the U.S. military and the other national security agencies or institutions of the U.S. executive branch have really obtained new and very far-reaching power to make war in ways that are really beyond the ability of the U.S. Congress, and the American people, of course, to be able to control. And I'm referring here to two or three things. One, the CIA's operations directorate got the approval from the Bush White House, and if this has continued, of course, under Obama, to have very wide discretion, very large degree of freedom to use drone strikes to attack individuals who they suspect are somehow associated with the Taliban, either Afghan or Pakistani Taliban, or the Al-Qaeda people in Pakistan. And this is all happening on the Pakistani side of the border. They have such wide freedom that, it's not necessary for them to have really sort of the normal intelligence basis for a decision to use lethal force.
Let alone a congressional declaration of war that's called for in the Constitution. Yeah.
So this is really an unprecedented degree of freedom given to a secret organization, essentially to continue to make war. The other thing that has happened, which in a way parallels that, is that the special operations forces, Special Operations Command, in its regional commands that are made up of task forces of special operations units, has gotten the same kind of freedom of operation to go into countries like Pakistan, Yemen, and Somalia and elsewhere. Of course, Afghanistan as well, and in Iran and in Iraq, they are carrying out the night raids or targeted raids against people that they suspect are enemies. And again, these targeted raids, which result very often in killing people, and very often they are innocent civilians, are based on, in many cases, only the most tenuous and very dubious intelligence. So, I mean, this is another case where an institution has been given unprecedented freedom of action.
Well, I was going to say, though, is this really, is this the military-industrial complex, or is this just the extension of executive military power beyond the scope of what had been previously?
Well, I think that you're right to distinguish between what has happened in recent years and the original formulation of the military-industrial complex. This is based on the power that the military and its allies have had for decades now, but it goes well beyond that. It is indeed a new kind of, I would argue, a new kind of state formation in which both military forces, the Special Operations Forces Command, constitutes de facto a kind of fourth or fifth, if you will, military service. I mean, technically it is not a military service, but the degree of freedom and budget and prestige that it's been given during the Bush, George W. Bush and Obama administrations really does make it a de facto additional military service. And so you have really a very new development here in terms of military the power of a military service or de facto military service to make war without very much regulation or control or even, being able to know what's going on. And I've written stories about the Special Operations Forces and have pointed out that other agencies, including the CIA, by the way, have been complaining that they cannot get any information about the targeting that Special Operations Forces are carrying out.
Hmm. Well, finish.
Same thing is true for the CIA. The CIA targeting for drone strikes is being kept from other agencies of the U.S. government, other intelligence agencies, for example. The military intelligence people are unable to get information about what the basis of the targeting by the CIA is, because it's being done on the fly, as it were. It's not vetted at all. It's not being checked out by disinterested analysts, if you will. It's being Basically, the CIA, as is the case with the Special Operations Forces, are basically finding the intelligence or making the intelligence and then using it instantly for operations. And this is a terrible thing to have happen because, you're the judge and executioner at the same time.
Well, let's do that. I've never done this, but I'm going to try a little technique here. I'm going to pretend like this is a phone-in show and I'm a caller.
Sure.
I'm going to say, okay, I'm going to take a call. Hi, you're on the air with Gareth Porter. Welcome to the Peter Werby Show. Hey, thanks for taking my call. Well, I've just heard what your guest said, but I don't think he realizes that this is the 21st century. It's not 20th century positional regular warfare. We're not fighting armies that that are in trenches or something like that. And what our military is attempting to do is to keep us safe. And we have to do things on the fly. We can't just be bound by 18th century rules or even 20th century rules. That if we want to keep ourselves safe, we've got to entrust these judgment calls to the people that are on the front lines. And I have to tell you that if a few people get ground up in the process, well, I'd rather it's them than us. Well, how do you answer that call?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is indeed a very common response to the situation that we're facing here. And I think the real problem, there are two problems. One is that I think a caller with that position is failing to recognize a fundamental reality of the 20th and 21st century United States, and that is that whether it's the military-industrial complex or what I call the permanent war state, these military and paramilitary institutions who are entrusted with this kind of power to make war are not disinterested institutions. They're not run by officials who are capable of or willing to separate out their own personal and institutional interests from the interests of the United States and the American people. And what we have seen over and over again, and Eisenhower was the first major political figure to recognize this and to say so, at least to imply so publicly, that these leaders of the military were operating in their own interests. I mean, they had interest in getting as many planes, as many missiles, as many troops, and as big of a budget as they possibly could. And Eisenhower understood that they were perfectly capable of using underhanded tactics. The Air Force, for example, put forward basically fabricated intelligence in order to try to put pressure on Eisenhower, first of all, to manufacture more fighter planes, or more bombers, excuse me, and then secondly, to have an urgent rush program of missile building.
Which is what Kennedy ran on in 1960,
exactly.
Dishonestly.
And my point is that Eisenhower understood that these military figures were acting on the interests of their own institutions and their own personal interests rather than the interests of the American people. And that's really the fundamental problem that we have here in the 21st century as well. You have these organizations who want to have drone strikes. They want to have more and more opportunities for night raids in more and more countries, and they're getting it. The consequences of that are not making us more safe. And I can tell you that I have written one story quoting a figure who has been in touch with people involved in the drone campaign personally, and that they're directly involved in the program, and they believe, based on what they have gotten from the CIA itself, that the consequences of the drone strike program have been to strengthen the ability of the Taliban and Al-Qaeda related organizations to recruit in Waziristan, where this program has been carried out. They believe very firmly, very strongly, that the consequence has been to strengthen the support for the Taliban rather than to weaken it. And so, I mean, this is the kind of thing that we face constantly, that the military force that is being applied by these institutions, supposedly to make us safer is having exactly the opposite effect.
Gareth Porter is my guest on the Peter Werbe Show. He's written recently From Military-Industrial Complex to Permanent War State. We're talking about the 50th anniversary of President Eisenhower's farewell speech, where he warned about the rise of a military-industrial complex. Let's talk in just the few minutes we have left about the economic effects of all of this. The conservatives talk about they want these free market, Friedman economics, but they, like everyone else, depends on this Keynesian model, which essentially is the government being this huge supplier of cash into the economy. And we have this situation where $1 trillion a year is transferred from private wealth, those of us that earn it, to the state. The state then disperses it essentially to the military-industrial complex. So it really is all, and as you correctly say, so we have a permanent war state, but it's a foundation, a fundamental of our economy. I mean, but what happens if you pull the struts out from under?
Well, it is a fundamental of our economy. There's no question about that. The real issue, however, is whether military Keynesianism is an effective form of stimulation of the economy. I mean, the reality is that when you buy missiles and tanks, and they're used up in a war, they don't really contribute in any way to the furtherance of economic growth in the United States. Once you spent the money, it's a waste. Whereas if it was non-military Keynesianism, if you were investing in transportation infrastructure or bridges and education and so forth, these are investments that have further knock-on effects, which involve obviously furthering the economic and social development of the United States. So it's not, in fact, Keynesianism in any meaningful sense. That is to say, Keynesianism in a sense that you're really furthering, you're maximizing economic development or economic growth.
It's ineffective, Keynesianism. In other words, you would get much more bang for your buck, so to speak. Well, maybe that's
right.
Maybe that's a
is,
weird analogy.
What it is very effective in doing, of course, is buying off members of Congress by spreading the contracts for the military programs across as many districts of Congress as possible, and they've been very clever about doing that, so that virtually every member of Congress has something in his district that he has to protect, and his vote then becomes subject to pressure not only from the contractor, but from the workers in his district who get paid by the military contractor, despite the fact that it's not an effective way of promoting economic growth. It works politically to keep the status quo.
And there are some jobs. Not like they produce none. So, if you start saying, well, we're going to cut the military budget, which we could and still
make
savings.
Right, and as the economy falters more and more, when you have a sector of the economy that is continuing to grow, as the military sector has, it's doubled since the end of the last decade, from 1998 to 2008, it more than doubled. So when you have a sector that continues to grow, of course it takes on greater and greater importance in terms of jobs and in terms of the politics of jobs in Congress.
Well, Gareth Porter, at the end, in fact, we're at the end of our interview as well, of your article about this subject, From Military-Industrial Complex to Permanent War State. It's at counterpunch.org, and there'll be a link on my website as well. You say the only thing missing from the picture that you described, where people oppose this kind of spending, is a grassroots political movement organized specifically to demand an end to the permanent warfare state. That's not on the agenda, and there's certainly no congressional political movement towards that. So we're just going to have to suck it up.
Nothing exists at this point that is even remotely close to what is needed to push back against this development. But I want to emphasize, and I tried to do that in my article, that this formation, this new formation that we've seen develop over the last 10 to 20 years particularly, is politically vulnerable. And it's vulnerable because particularly you have a combination of a war, which is increasingly very unpopular, that is Afghanistan, which in a way parallels the post-Vietnam situation, where the American people turned against Vietnam so strongly that it then led to strong opposition to high levels of military spending for another 15 years or so.
Let me get you to give the two other ones quickly, because we're almost out of time. Sorry.
Yes, so opposition to the war plus opposition to high military spending are now very well documented. And then you have, of course, the issue of the deficit and the necessity to really cut the budget very radically in order to deal with that. And really, you know, that has to involve very deep cuts in the military budget, because that represents 56% at least, perhaps it's more than that now, of discretionary spending in the federal budget.
I want to thank you so much, Gareth Porter. Gareth's first name is spelled G-A-R-E-T-H. Gareth Porter, his articles are easily available through a Google search. His latest, and I think sums up what we just talked about, From Military Industrial Complex to the Permanent War State, is available at counterpunch.org. There'll also be a link on my site, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com. This is an issue we need to face. Gareth Porter, thanks for being on my program.
Thanks very much, Peter.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Rip Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Listen up, ladies. Right now, Bare Minerals by Bare Essentials is inviting you to participate in a special nationwide giveaway of the mineral makeup everyone's talking about. That's right. We're letting everyone who calls try America's number one mineral makeup risk-free. Just call 1-800-506-8947 to find out how. This is an exclusive radio-only offer you don't want to miss. You've probably heard about Bare Minerals Foundation. It was quoted in Glamour Magazine as a magic eraser. Allure Magazine, InStyle, and Elle Magazines, and Leaders in Beauty continue to rave about how Bare Minerals Foundation is naturally radiant and good for your skin. Now you can participate in our nationwide giveaway and see for yourself. Bare Minerals, makeup so pure you can sleep in it. Experience the foundation that started the makeup revolution. Participate in this special opportunity to try Bare Minerals Foundation risk-free. We will also send you a free gift set. Just call 1-800-506-8947 now. Hurry, you don't want to miss this exclusive radio offer. 1-800-506-8947.
Do you own a car you no longer want, and you don't have the time or energy to sell it? Donate your car to Heritage for the Blind. Your donation is tax deductible, and your car will be towed away for free. Call 1-800-943-1356. Heritage for the Blind accepts cars, trucks, vans, and boats. It doesn't matter if your vehicle runs or not. Call now. Your donation will help those in need. Heritage for the Blind is a nonprofit organization that helps the visually impaired live fuller lives. Call now to donate your car, and as a special thank you, you'll receive a free 3-day vacation voucher to over 50 locations. Call Heritage for the Blind right now. Call 1-800-943-1356. Donating is easy, it's tax deductible, and your vehicle is towed away for free. Plus, you'll get a free vacation voucher by donating. Call 1-800-943-1356. 1-800-943-1356.
I guess we got caught up in the crazy housing boom.
We had been in the house so long, we didn't want to lose it.
What these people share is that they all got in trouble with their mortgages, and they all called a certified housing counselor for help.
Our housing counselor looked at our paperwork and she knew something was wrong.
She understood what needed to be done, and she helped me work it out with the bank.
This is a free service. Call the National Foundation for Credit Counseling now. Call 1-866-687-6322 or visit mortgagehelpnow.org.
Getting you back to the rock.
That's what I'm talking about.
101 WRIF. The Riff.
Kick it! Come on, please.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.